RA-TV with Cam Edwards.
Good Wednesday to you. Thank you so much for tuning in to another edition of Cam and Company, fueled by our friends at Hornady, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Cam Edwards, your host, and welcome to the program. We've got a great show for you today. Sean Maloney is going to join us from Buckeye Firearms Association, member of the NRA's Board of Directors, later in the hour. We've got an update on what's going on out in Madison, Ohio, where Every Town for Gun Safety now sending out letters urging Madison local schools to not arm a portion of the school staff there. We'll talk with Sean about that. I mean, this is the decision the local school district made in conjunction with local law enforcement, but the gun control activists there say they're not anti-gun. Apparently, they're not only anti-gun, they are anti-school security. Rhonda Ezell, Chicago Guns Matter, joining us next hour. Tom King of the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, Andrew Langer with the Institute for Liberty, Stephen Kreuzer, PJ Media, and join us on the program right now of the Washington Free Beacon. Our friend Stephen Gutowski is with us. Stephen, good afternoon, sir.
Hey, how you doing, Cam?
I am excellent. I appreciate you coming on the program. You had a fascinating story posted last night, and I wanted to have you on just to give you kudos to this and to talk about this with you a little bit. So this is out of New York's 21st Congressional District, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, and so this is a seat currently held by a Republican, Elise Stepanek, and the challenger in this case, Tedra Cobb, the Democratic candidate, recently caught on tape. And, I mean, Stephen, you know, we live in a world of clickbait headlines. There's not a headline you can write that would be clickbaity enough for this audio, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, essentially, in the video that came out, Tedra Cobb says, you know, I'm for what she calls an assault rifles ban, but that she can't say that publicly because, well, she would lose her election. People wouldn't vote for her.
Yeah, that's amazing. So we've got this video. I want you to hear it. We'll play it. It's about now. The whole thing is about 16 minutes long, and it's fascinating. Actually, the whole 60 minutes is worth listening to, but we're going to play it just this portion where Tedra Cobb, the Democratic candidate in New York's 21st District, is talking to teenage gun control supporters about gun control in her election. Look and listen.
When I was at this thing today, the first table I was at, a woman said, how do you feel about assault rifles? And I said, they should be banned. And I said, you know, then people were getting up to go to go get their lunch. It was a buffet.
Yeah.
And I just said to her, I want you to know, Cindy, I cannot say that out loud. And she said, well, I want you to. And I said, I won't win.
Exactly. It's like, there's things you want to say.
I said, "Moms demand." Yeah, moms
they
says.
You.
And Trisha Plouffe said, "Do not say that you want an assault rifle ban because you will not
Before
win."
Before we had our walkout, we met with Moms in Action, Every Town for Gun Safety, this group of people, and they gave us all this advice on like what to say, what not to say. Say it's gun balance prevention.
We should have done that.
Say it's not gun control, like, because
that's what
they spin your words so much.
You cannot
okay,
say
okay,
the word.
Because they spin your words, that's fine. We can drop out now. Don't talk. My mom's demands telling us, these, you know, teen gun control activists, what to say and what not to say. Don't call it gun control because they'll spin the words. How do you spin gun control? The reason why Moms Demand Action is saying that is because gun control doesn't poll well. Gun safety still does, so they'll try to co-opt that language. Now, Stephen, you know, again, this was really fascinating because not only did Tedra Cobb, the Democratic candidate there in New York's 21st District, say that she had told this woman, I really would like to ban guns, but I can't say it publicly because I would lose. She said Moms Demand Action had actually told her to not be honest with voters.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating look into sort of what goes on behind the scenes in some congressional campaigns and the kind of strategy that they're employing on the gun rights issue. In this case, just sort of lying about what they actually believe.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. And again, I'm sure if this were a bluer district, she could be honest about, you know, what she thinks about these gun bans. But as I said, this is a district that Elise Stepanek won 2 years ago. She's the youngest member of Congress. She's, I think, 28. It was a district that went for President Trump or President Obama twice and then went for Trump, I think, 54-40 They're in, you know, Hillary Clinton's New York. So this is one of those Salina Zito great revolt districts. And so the strategy is you can't run like your Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in these districts. You have to present that sort of moderate face. Now, one fascinating twist of this story, Stephen, is like 3 days ago, one of the local papers there, the Post Star, tweeted out that this candidate, Tedra Cobb, had signed the paper's No Lies pledge. No, like 3 days ago, and Tedra Cobb actually retweeted this out, and she said, I think we've got the tweet here. I have run my campaign with honesty and integrity from the very beginning. That won't change now. Yeah. I mean, that's just like the little cherry on top of the sundae that you put together here, Stephen.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when we're talking about politicians, it's probably safe to assume that they're not always telling us the truth. But, you know, it's very rare that you find a situation like this one where it's all laid out so, you know, matter-of-factly, like here she is saying, oh, no, I would never tell the truth about this, right after she made, you know, made that pledge.
Honesty and integrity. Well, listen, Stephen, I appreciate you coming on the show today. As I said, it was a great story, and had a lot of fun digging into this morning. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
Absolutely.
Stephen Gutowski. Make sure you're following Stephen, by the way, so you can get stories like this in your Twitter feed, at Stephen Gutowski. That'd be Stephen with a PH. Just like our friend Steven Cruiser, who'll be with us on the program coming up in hour three. Yeah, that reminds me, Cameron, we don't have a lot of Stevens with a V. Can you work on that? I've noticed that. I think you might be a little biased towards Stephen with PH.
Stephen Hallbrook. I think about that too. We have a dearth of Vs.
That's right. Well, we'll try to work on that. Now, one more note. I mentioned that Tedra Cobb had retweeted this out a couple of days ago from the Post Star, which is one of the local papers there in upstate New York. And so the Post-Star had this no lies pledge that they were asking both Tedra Cobb and Elise Stepanek to sign. And Tedra Cobb was the first to do so. And again, they run the headline, Cobb takes papers, no lies pledge. Tedra Cobb retweets this out. I've run my campaign with honesty and integrity from the very beginning. That won't change now. So last night, Stephen comes out with a story. It takes off a little bit last night. It takes off more today. Fox News reported on this nationally. Locally, the Albany Times Union has picked it up. North Country Public Radio in New York City has picked it up. A lot of local media outlets have picked up this story, with one really glaring exception, the Post-Star newspaper. The newspaper who had this pledge and presented it to the candidate who's now been caught lying, saying, I can't tell the voters what I really think about a gun ban because then they won't vote for me. They haven't run anything on that. Now, what they have run and what they've tweeted about today is a column, The Answer for Me is Not Gun Ownership. And this column written by, I think, the managing editor of the paper on the editorial board, one of those who actually put this no lies pledge together, according to the paper's coverage. Do you think, Cameron, there's a coincidence there? Do you think maybe the two are connected?
Possibly.
Or is this just a conspiracy theory that I'm just ginning up here?
I'm gonna give you the benefit of the doubt.
I'm gonna be watching this afternoon. You can play along at home if you would like. Here, we're just gonna see if it's at Post Star on Twitter. That's the newspaper, and we'll see if they tweet about this at all over the course of the show. Because, I mean, this is it's a legit story. It's the biggest political story right now in upstate New York. And we'll also follow the candidate herself, Tedra Cobb, who last tweeted yesterday, hardworking people deserve fair pay for their work. This administration has reversed hard-won overtime compensation for salaried employees who earn over $23,606 a year. That amount is below the federal poverty level for a family of four. This has to be raised. That was the last tweet. And the story breaks. Newspaper reports, local media reports that Tedra Cobb and the campaign spokesperson have been unavailable for comment since this story broke. Cameron, do you think people would get the reference if we started a Has Tedra Landed Yet hashtag?
Some people would. I fear it's not as mainstream as it should be. I think
we've moved on.
Yeah, that would be like a totally inside joke at this point.
Yeah, all right. Well, we won't start that one then. But we will be watching Tedra Cobb for Congress, who's on Twitter at Tedra Cobb. I'm fascinated. I mean, obviously, as a gun owner and a Second Amendment supporter, look, I mean, this is it. This is the state of the gun control movement, particularly in these purple districts. As I said, if this were Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Moms Demand Action would not be telling her, hey, don't talk about a gun ban. She's talking about banning guns. It's on her campaign platform. But in a district that they're hoping to flip, you don't talk about banning guns. What's even more interesting is just a couple of days ago, I think it was it Politico that came out with that story about this is the first year since 94 where Democrats aren't afraid to run on gun control. Do you remember that? And, oh, you know, that we got demolished in 94, and then we've just been terrified to run on gun control ever since. But not this year. This year we're speaking up and we're speaking our mind. And you know what? We're doing it because it's popular. Is it? If it were popular, you think you wouldn't have Moms Demand Action staffers telling candidates, hey, don't talk about banning guns or else you'll lose the election. If it were popular, you think it'd be the opposite. Talk more about how you want to ban these guns. It'll help you win the election. But nope, apparently that's not happening in New York's 21st Congressional District. Makes you wonder how many other districts there are around the country where Moms Demand Action actually telling candidates, don't talk about what you actually believe because it would scare voters. Don't talk about the positions that you really hold because then you won't get elected. Again, we know they're telling these teen activists, don't talk about gun control. Don't call it gun control. Call it gun safety instead. Now, what's different? What policies were dropped when they dropped the gun control brand and tried to adopt gun safety instead? Did they lose any of the policies? Apparently not. They still like banning guns. They don't talk about them, but they still like those policies. It is great, frankly, as a gun owner, to see this revealed so clearly. But I can't help but wonder again how commonplace this is in swing districts around the country. And as a student of politics, frankly, I would just, wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall right now at the Tedra Cobb campaign headquarters, Cameron? Oh, my Lord.
The thing is, though, other than us talking about it, will this get any coverage? Yeah. So it's like, yeah, you talk about being a fly on the wall. They have more on their side where they can just wait this out. And it'll just go away. You'll talk about it. Steven will talk about it. Other than that, do they really have to worry about a strategy? Give it a day or two, and then is the Post Star going to call them out on it? And beyond that,
well,
other than a national coverage, which they probably think is a good thing, it's what will really happen to her?
We'll talk about this with Tom King. I'm curious. The Post Star is not the only local paper there. There's also Sun Community News, which has written about this story. I mentioned North Country Public Radio has covered it in true public radio fashion, very even-handed. So it appears as if she may have been dishonest with voters, you know, that sort of thing. I haven't, you know, done a Facebook search to see how many people are talking about this in the 21st on Facebook. But this is one of those stories that, look, if you're a hardcore Democrat, you're not going to not vote for her because of this. Oh, she's lying to the bumpkins about not wanting to take their guns? Oh, okay. That's fine. Right? I mean, like, okay, sure. I'll lie to them, too. What do you want me to say? But if you're anywhere to the right of that, if you are not committed to the Democratic candidate in the slightest, if you're an independent, maybe you're just looking, maybe you don't like either one, whatever. If you are an uncommitted voter in terms of I'm not committed to the Democrat, I actually think this is something that could absolutely turn off voters. And it doesn't even have to be that guns are their issue. There will be ads with this audio, I assume, and video. Voters will see this. And can we just listen to it one more time? Because I want you to just listen to, again, how matter-of-factly she's talking about this. I mean, there's no, it's not like, yeah, I feel bad that I can't be honest. I wish I could. Nah, she's comfortable with it. She's comfortable with not being honest with the people who would put her in office. And as a voter, again, I would be very, very uncomfortable with that. But just listen again.
When I was at this thing today, the first table I was at, a woman said, how do you feel about assault rifles? And I said, they should be banned. And I said, you know, then people were getting up to go to go get their lunch. It was a buffet.
Yes.
I just said to her, I want you to know, Cindy, I cannot say that out loud.
Sorry.
And she said, well, I want you to. And I said, I won't win.
Exactly. Like, there's things you want to say, but
I said,
you
moms
also
demand.
To
that. Yeah, moms
they
says.
You.
And Trisha Plouffe said, do not say that you want an assault rifle ban because you will not
Before
win.
Before we had our walkout, we met with moms who demand action, every Trump or gun safety.
There you go. I mean, listen, I cannot say it. I will not win. There's no struggle there. There was no, you know what? I told Trish, you're supposed to be a gun control activist. You're supposed to be advocating for public safety. You're telling me that I can't go out and publicly talk about the positions that I support because you're afraid it might cost me votes? No, that wasn't the response. That wasn't the response at all. It was, listen, Mom's Demand is telling me not to talk about it. If Mom's Demand is telling me not to talk about it, I'm not going to talk about it. You're going to have a really hard time calling your opponent a tool of the gun lobby when that is available for every voter to listen to. You're going to have a really hard time calling yourself an independent voice for New Yorkers when that is available for the voters to listen to. And you're going to have a really hard time proclaiming that you've run your campaign with honesty and integrity from the very beginning when that was what was said when you thought nobody was listening. So that's why I say that I think this issue actually will resonate. It may be a slow burn of an issue, but I don't think it's going away. Anyway, we'll talk more about this with Tom King coming up in hour two. Sean Maloney joins us from Buckeye Firearms Association, member of the NRA's Board of Directors. After a quick timeout, we'll talk about what's going on in Madison local schools there in Ohio, where every town for gun safety. Gun safety. Trying to get involved in telling local parents and teachers and educators and law enforcement how best to protect their kids. Stick around. We've got more Cam and Company on the way.
Everyone understands the importance of securing our public places. That's why every major corporate campus and office tower, every sporting event, celebrity award show, and government building, all of it is protected by multiple layers of security. But when it comes to our most precious resource, not gold or oil or precious jewels, our children, we utterly fail to protect them at school every single day. Each day that goes by, our banks and businesses are better protected than our children. That's a national outrage. NRA's School Shield program has already made world-class security resources available to hundreds of American schools. It's free of politics, and it's free of charge. If your child's school isn't protected, ask them to call School Shield today. We're the National Rifle Association of America, guardians of our school children. And freedom's safest place.
It's as patriotic as it gets. A gathering in the heartland of folks from all 50 states. Welders, saleswomen, farmers, accountants, soldiers, first responders. Here, we're all the same. Here, we are all race fans. We are proud of our country, proud of our military, proud of our drivers. We proudly stand for our national anthem, and we have a great reverence for names like Yarborough, Earnhardt, Waltrip, and Gordon. Yes, there are other NASCAR races, but this one is special. 500 temper flaring, finger waving, ego busting 15 second laps, and deep into the warm August night, hardly a seat in the last great Coliseum will be used. You see, this isn't just a race. This is America's night race.
Speaking with Cole McCullough about the NRA World Shooting Championship, Cole is the Competitive Shooting Division Director. And Cole, this one's near and dear to your heart because this is your baby, isn't it?
You better believe it is, and very proud of it. And there's a lot of great people that put it on, but we're going into our fifth year now.
Wow, it's amazing how quickly this thing has grown.
It is, and how fast we get old, right? So you got to take advantage of the good days while we have them.
So tell people, what is the NRA, the World Shooting Championship?
Well, the NRA World Shooting Championship is really the great end-all be-all to competitive shooting that a lot of us view, meaning that we're going to provide all of the guns and all of the ammunition and all of the optics, and shooters are going to come in, and over a period of 3 to 4 days, they're going to have to shoot and conduct themselves across 12 different types of shooting disciplines, whether it's USPSA or three-gun or NRA precision pistol or long-range rifle or shotgun. You're going to have to perform all, and they equally count against you, and the winner is going to be the World Shooting Championship, the greatest shooter in the world.
Tell us about where it is and when it is.
It's September 20th to 22nd at the Peacemaker National Training Center in West Virginia.
And if you haven't been to Peacemaker, Cole, tell us about it.
Well, it's great. We love it. Been there for many years, of course, those of you that know me. Certainly, Peacemaker has about 20 different ranges, is a huge complex, and is one of the largest places in the world, conducts basically as many shooting competitions as any place in the world.
And it's a beautiful drive out to get there, and it's a gorgeous facility. NRA World Shooting Championships, Cole McCullough, how do we get more information?
You can just go to your website and just search NRA World Shooting Championship, and there's a website. There's only about 20 spots remaining. The match is almost full after about 2 weeks. So if you'd like to sign up or help the match in some way, you can register for that. But if you go online, you can check that out. It's also presented by Kimber, and there's about 40 different sponsors. So we're always very grateful to the sponsors as well.
Whether you compete or help out, you need to get out there and check it out.
Absolutely.
Cole, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back to Cam and Company. Here on NRA TV, Cam Edwards, your host. About an hour from now, Ronnie Zell of Chicago Guns Matter joining us on the program. Right now, I want to welcome from the NRA's board of directors, also part of the Buckeye Farms Association leadership team, Mr. Sean Maloney is with us on the program. Sean, how are you, sir?
Cam, I'm doing pretty good.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear it. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, it actually doesn't get much better than it is right now for me if you enjoy doing what I like doing. And then to have Michael Bloomberg decide he wants to come in town to whip things up is really kind of exciting.
Yeah, this is and listen, we've been talking for months now about what's going on at the local school board level. And we've been telling gun owners, you know, Moms Demand Action volunteers, they're showing up at local school board meetings. They're mm-hmm. urging local school boards to sign resolutions to send to Congress calling for more gun control. And in these localities where, you know, armed school staff might be a thing, we're seeing Moms Demand Action and Every Town for Gun Safety, the Bloomberg anti-gun groups, they're starting to show up and to push back here. So, well, this goes back a couple of months. Madison Local School District there in Ohio mm-hmm. voted unanimously there to have an armed school staff program. And what, did Moms Demand Action like just now hear about it? Because, again, the vote was several months ago, Sean.
You know, I don't know why they came out of the woodwork. You know, I'm involved in a couple lawsuits with preemption violations in Cincinnati and Columbus. And suddenly Michael Bloomberg is sending attorneys to act pro hoc vitae and intercede on behalf of these cities to help them out. So that, you know, that surprised me, and that's why I was a little giddy about hearing that. I mean, as you know, thanks in no small part to you, I took a plane to Colorado some years ago because Michael Bloomberg was showing up there stirring things up. So you can imagine what it's been like in Ohio having him here. But then to have them all of a sudden get involved with Madison some 2 months later when they've already been through faster training, they're already excited that the Butler County Sheriff's Department is with their school resource officers who are there, and they're getting ready to go, and now suddenly Moms Demand Action show up and Bloomberg shows up with a letter and says, you know, we know we have plaintiffs for a lawsuit. We're going to take action. So I've been talking with Sheriff Rick Jones this morning and with also Joe Eaton of FasterSavesLives.org and some other people. And Friday at 5:30, there's going to kind of be almost a town hall, but it's going to be an open discussion again at Madison where we're going to fill the place up. We're going to make sure everybody understands what we're doing, and then the school is going to go back into executive session. So it's – nobody's going to take this lying down to make the decision. of how best to protect our children on a local level, and then have somebody like Michael Bloomberg and his people come in and try to tell us how we're going to save our kids and how we're going to sleep better at night and be able to go to work during the day knowing our kids are protected. You know, it's ridiculous. It's preposterous that they're doing this. So, yeah, I can't wait to hear their argument, their counter-argument to mine. I'd be very interested in try to discern what form of logic they're going to try to use to pull this off.
Well, one of the things that I'm wondering about, Sean, is why get lawyers involved? It sounds like this letter does not explicitly state we're prepared to litigate if you go forward with this policy. But clearly, I mean, from my layman's perspective, if I'm getting a letter from an attorney, I'm thinking, all right, well, they're considering legal action. On what basis? I mean, there was a school board vote. It was a unanimous vote. Mm-hmm. There's no allegations that the meeting was held in public or without a due prior notice to the public. Uh-huh. I mean, it just sounds like this parent didn't get the decision that she wanted, and so now she's threatening a lawsuit with the backing of these gun control groups.
You know, you're probably right. A lot of people, when they're desperate and have nowhere else to turn, try to find a group or an organization that's sympathetic to them. But purely in this case, everything was done properly. Public comment was taken. Nothing was done in secret. And it's been in the news everywhere, and there's been excitement about it. And now other school districts nearby say, we want the same thing for our kids. And to threaten, legal action, as you mentioned, and then to have these people all of a sudden say, you know, we want things our way, doesn't make sense at all. But I guess that's the Michael Bloomberg for this upcoming election cycle or years to come. We saw them with referendums, and now they seem to be attacking everybody they can on the local level. And I think they've targeted Colorado, and they've certainly targeted Ohio in the past few weeks. So this would be interesting. And, you know, maybe this is what we need to out Michael Bloomberg and his people so they understand who these people really are all about. They don't care about safety. They don't care about our kids.
Talking again with Sean Maloney of the Buckeye Firearms Association, member of the NRA's Board of Directors as well. So when is this meeting going to take place, Sean?
It's going to be Friday at 5:30 at Madison High School. It's gonna be right at the main entrance. You won't be able to miss it. 5:30. If you're within driving distance of my voice, make sure you show up at Madison Local School High School. 5:30 on Friday. We're gonna have a public comment session, and then the school district's gonna go back into an executive session. I'm not sure what they're gonna discuss, but we're getting the word out. Buckeye Firearms. We've emailed our local people. I have my emails, and I've been making phone calls for the past hour or two to make sure that we're heard and everybody understands that, you know, this is our county, and our kids' lives at stake, and we're not gonna back down for anybody.
Sean Maloney, listen, I appreciate you coming to the program, sir. It's great talking with you today.
Hey, thanks for everything you're doing, Cam. It's important. I was listening to your prior segment, and people have to know. They have to know the truth. And you're right. We'll see if the mainstream media is going to get that out there. But I'm hopeful that certainly they're going to use part of what you and Cameron are doing, and there'll be some great political commercials coming out of that.
Well, I'm with you. I just hope the word gets out about this, Sean Maloney. Because, you know, what Sean's talking about, thank you so much, Sean. I appreciate it. You know, we do live in this world where we know what's going on in Thailand, but we might not know what's going on at our local school board, right? I mean, it's entirely possible that you're going to know more about what's happening in Kyrgyzstan than at your local grocery store or what's going on with your, you know, downtown business district. It's this weird world that we live in where we – you know, we have all of these information channels available to us, but a lot of the local news gets treated as unimportant news. And I don't think that's the case. I mean, what happens in the world, you know, where you live, your town, your community, your neighborhood, your HOA, your condo association, has a huge impact on your life. But it may be increasingly difficult to actually find out about what's going on in those institutions unless you're actually there, unless you're engaged. And again, if you've ever shown up at a school board meeting, when your kid's not being
presented with an award, you know, they're generally pretty sparsely attended. Same with city council meetings. In some cases, local governments and these types of institutions, they don't make it easy to actually attend. I had to actually miss a show one day because my daughter was getting an award at a school board meeting, and they had the school board meetings at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay, well, I'm sure it's very convenient for the school board members, but really inconvenient for parents, students, and teachers who might want to show up too. So, it is important that we do use our own networks, because we are our own media channels, our Twitter feed, our Facebook feed, and it's important that we use those outlets to get information out and not, again, just talk about the stories that everybody else is talking about, but talk about those stories that are happening where you live and make sure that others in your community know what's happening where you live. I guarantee you it's going to have an impact on your daily life. Look, Moms Demand Action and these gun control groups wouldn't be getting involved at the local level if they didn't think that they could impact your life as a gun owner by getting involved on that level, right? They'd be focusing all of their efforts on Congress. They'd be trying to stop Brett Kavanaugh from getting confirmed to the court. Now, they're doing all that, too. But again, they're showing up at your local school board meetings. They're going to the city council meetings. They're offering to pay pro bono all of the legal fees when cities like Columbus that Sean just mentioned pass their own local gun control laws and get sued for violating state preemption law. Gun control groups are stepping in and saying, all right, we'll pick up the tab. Don't worry about it. Hey, if there are any other cities out there that want to try to change the law here by passing your own gun control laws, we'll pay your legal fees too. Every one of those avenues where the gun control groups are operating right now is important. They wouldn't be there if they weren't. So we've got to be there too. All right, now, we've got more news to get to this afternoon. Have just a couple of minutes here. And I want to get to something. Speaking of Brett Kavanaugh, so one of the big attacks on Brett Kavanaugh right now, Cameron, and I think this—I don't know—this might sink the nomination. His name is Brett.
Okay.
That's it. That's the attack. His name is Brett.
That's really that. This is an actual attack. I missed this one.
Oh yeah, Stephen Colbert last night had a joke about. Oh, I don't know about his judicial temperament, but Brett sounds like the name of a waiter at Ruby Tuesday.
What does that even mean? Oh, my God.
I don't know.
That's pathetic.
And then NARAL tweeted out something earlier today about, we're not going to let five men, including a frat boy named Brett, tell us about our reproductive rights, something like that. So, yeah, apparently that's the big line of attack right now. Can you believe his name is Brett?
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yeah.
My favorite ones are, you know, it's fun because there's a tweet for everything. And it's fun. I forget. If I find it, I'll put it at Cam and Company. A couple people have pointed out the hypocrisy where he came on and brought his beautiful daughters with him and talked about, hey, I'm a basketball dad. We had all this stuff with the youth league. And they're like, you know, the feminists are like, that doesn't erase the fact that he's going to take away your contraceptives and your birth control and your tampons and everything lady part related. It's over with. That's ridiculous. But the same people were praising Barack Obama the way he treated his daughters, and you know this is how you know fathers and daughters should be. So it's going back and just seeing the hypocrisy of any possible way to attack this person, and then you're saying they're going after his name. I mean, it's just, they're really in a world where John Tester is floating possibly voting for Kavanaugh. They're freaking out, I guess.
They are. Listen, okay, so Mother Jones had this piece yesterday. This is actually one of the more substantive lines of attack on, well, I won't say substantive, but at least it's arguing his legal position, not the fact that his parents named him Brett. Oh, my God, Becky, can you believe it? Brett. Anyway, this is from Mother Jones. Here's how Kavanaugh could deal a big blow to gun control. Now, I don't deny that Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court may make the Supreme Court more inclined to hear cases. I don't know, but I think it's entirely plausible. I hope so. But it's well worth noting that the gun control groups are lying. I know it's a shocker, right? They're lying about what the Supreme Court has said regarding our right to keep and bear arms. So this piece at Mother Jones, Kara Vogt, or Vaught, is the author here, talked with Avery Gardner, who is former lawyer, co-president of the Brady campaign, and talked to Avery Gardner about Brett Kavanaugh and his position on the Second Amendment. Tell me what we know about Judge Kavanaugh's position on gun rights. And Avery Gardner said, well, what we know about his stances is through the opinions that he's issued on assault weapons, which is, that's true. A challenge to D.C.'s ban on assault weapons went before him and two other judges. All three were appointed by Republicans. The panel split 2-1 to uphold the law with Judge Kavanaugh as the dissenter. That is also true. He thinks assault weapons are within the scope of the Second Amendment, which puts him way out of step with the Supreme Court and circuit courts that have considered this issue. That's half true. He actually, it's maybe two-thirds true. He does think assault weapons, quote-unquote assault weapons, semi-automatic long guns, are within the scope of the Second Amendment. That does not put him out of step with the Supreme Court. It actually puts him in step with the Supreme Court. It does put him out of step with some other circuit courts who have gone out of their way to say that, no, these guns aren't protected by the Second Amendment. Or some courts have said, well, these guns are protected by the Second Amendment, but we can infringe on those rights in the name of public safety. Avery Gardner of the Brady campaign said, quote, the Second Amendment protects the kinds of weapons that were in common use at the time. In 1791, when the Second Amendment was adopted. Those, she says, are former Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia's words. And she says Judge Kavanaugh just uses the first part of that phrase, in common use, and leaves out the at that time part. Now, that is a complete and total lie. Lie. In fact, the Supreme Court has said the opposite. They said it twice. They may have actually, no, I take it back. They said it three times. They said it in Heller. They said it in McDonald. And then a couple of years ago in 2016, they said it in a case called the Catano case out of Massachusetts. This was a case dealing with stun guns in the state of Massachusetts. Massachusetts had banned stun guns. Stun guns obviously not around in 1791. Although you would think with all of the stuff that Benjamin Franklin invented, Cameron, the father of electricity, would have come up with a stun gun, even accidentally. Right. Kind of amazed that he didn't.
And a side note, you talk about Ben Franklin. I enjoyed your tweet where you talked about his age, because now we're the people are saying, I guess it was Jeffrey Toobin, this lifetime appointments to the Supreme Court are ridiculous. And you pointed out accurately how old Ben Franklin was at the time.
I know. I mean, really, honestly, it's you can lead a CNN legal analyst to knowledge, but you can't make him think. I don't know. Okay. So 2016, the Gaetano case, the Supreme Court, this is about 6 weeks after Antonin Scalia passes away. And in a note of unanimity, all eight justices on the court tell the Supreme Judicial Court in Massachusetts, the state Supreme Court of Massachusetts, you're getting it wrong on this stun gun ban stuff. Let's go back and remind you what we said in Heller. So I'm quoting here from the Supreme Court in Catano, decided March 21st, 2016. The Massachusetts Supreme Court offered three explanations to support its holding that the Second Amendment does not extend to stun guns. First, the court explained that stun guns are not protected because they were not in common use at the time of the Second Amendment's enactment. In other words, that is exactly the Brady campaign, Avery Gardner's argument, is what the state of Massachusetts said. Well, these things run around, so they can't be protected by the Second Amendment. Here's what the court said. This is inconsistent with Heller's clear statement that the Second Amendment extends to arms that were not in existence at the time of the founding. Okay, now, Avery Gardner and the Brady campaign can't be any more wrong than that. Is there any correction at Mother Jones, by the way? No. Has Avery Gardner bothered to correct the record? I corrected it for her last night, tweeted this all out at her. Nah, apparently not worth correcting. Maybe they don't want people to know. The court, by the way, the Supreme Court went on to say, the court next asked whether stun guns are, quote, dangerous per se at common law and unusual. That's one of the other arguments that the gun control advocates have here trying to ban the most commonly sold rifle in America today. Well, they're dangerous and unusual. And the Supreme Court said if guns were dangerous or unusual, we could ban them. The Supreme Court says that's not actually what we said. By equating unusual with in common use at the time of the Second Amendment's enactment, the court's second explanation is the same as the first. It is inconsistent with Heller for the same reason. In other words, an arm can't be considered unusual because it wasn't around in 1791. And that's what the Supreme Court, that was one of their other arguments. So it's not protected by the Second Amendment because stun guns weren't around in 1791. And stun guns are unusual because they weren't around in 1791. And the Supreme Court said if something is dangerous or unusual, we can ban it. So we're banning it. And the court, by the way, actually didn't say dangerous or unusual. They said dangerous and unusual, which is a legal distinction that does make a difference. The Supreme Court went on to say, finally, the court used a contemporary lens and found nothing in the record to suggest that stun guns are readily adaptable to use in the military. But Heller rejected the proposition that, quote, only those weapons useful in warfare are protected. For these three reasons, the explanation that the Massachusetts court offered for upholding the law contradicts this court's precedent. Consequently, the petition for a writ of certiorari and the motion for leave to proceed in form of papyrus are granted. The judgment of the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts is vacated, and the case is remanded for further proceedings not inconsistent with its opinion. Again, that was a unanimous opinion by the Supreme Court of the United States. Even Sonia Sotomayor, even Justice Ginsburg signed on to this, noting that the Second Amendment does not just apply to arms that would have been around in 1791, like muskets. And yet this is the lie that the Brady campaign's Avery Gardner right now is trying to peddle to her side, by the way, to her supporters, to the supporters of gun control. So, by the way, in the course of this hour, we've documented that you've got a candidate who supports gun bans in New York who's afraid to tell voters that she supports gun bans because then people won't vote for her. So she's lying to voters. Now you've got Avery Gardner of the Brady campaign lying to gun control supporters, lying to the left about what the Supreme Court thinks about the Second Amendment in order to try to gin up the outrage about Brett Kavanaugh. It's almost like if they're really honest about what it is that they want, they won't get their way. They think the best and perhaps the only way that they can win is to not tell the truth. All right, stick around. We got to take a timeout. When we come back, we've got more of the day's top stories headed your way right here on Cam and Company.
Let me ask you a simple question. Do you believe you have a right to defend yourself and your family with a firearm in your own home? Four Supreme Court justices say you do, but four say you don't, because the deciding vote announced he's retiring. And your most fundamental right to self-defense could be extinguished. This is our opportunity to protect the one freedom that guarantees all the others. The freedom that makes America different from every other country on earth. The Second Amendment is at stake. America is at stake. We are the last place on earth that still believes in the fundamental God-given right of self-defense. And we don't care if we're the last ones in the arena. We will never, ever stop fighting for this freedom. We're the National Rifle Association of America. And we're freedom's safest place.
It's as patriotic as it gets. A gathering in the heartland of folks from all 50 states. Welders, salesmen, farmers, accountants, soldiers, first responders. Here, we're all the same. Here, we are all race fans. We are proud of our country, proud of our military, proud of our drivers. We proudly stand for our national anthem, and we have a great reverence for names like Yarborough, Earnhardt, Waltrip, and Gordon. Yes, there are other NASCAR races, but this one is special. 500 temper flaring, finger waving, ego busting 15 second laps. And deep into the warm August night, hardly a seat in the last great Coliseum will be used. You see, this isn't just a race. This is America's night race.
Speaking with Eric Lipp with the NRA Refuse to Be a Victim program. Eric, welcome back. And what is the Refuse to Be a Victim program?
Well, thanks for having me. Refuse to Be a Victim is a very simple crime prevention program that the NRA put together many, actually 25 years ago this year, mainly for its members or its members of its family that had wanted a source for crime prevention that didn't involve a firearm. So we started as a basic, morally of awareness, crime prevention techniques, you know, things you can do to keep your home secure, with travel secure, physical security, and it's evolved since that over 25 years, and now we go everything from the things we mentioned to we dive into a ton of technology security, scams online, and anything that can harm you, and we try to keep take care of you.
So, Eric, the NRA is known for firearms training and protecting your Second Amendment rights. Why get into a program that doesn't involve firearms? What's the logic?
Well, like I said, some people just aren't comfortable with firearms. You know, we have a lot of members who might have wives or other parts of their family who just aren't comfortable with a firearm, and they demanded that, you know, buying a gun isn't the only solution to stopping crime. So, you know, anything from that could prevent confrontations with criminals, where places to avoid, ways to think like a criminal. You know, you want to be, when you think like them, you can learn how to avoid them also.
And how do we get more information about the program?
Real easy. It's rtbav.nra.org. You can find seminars on there based off your zip code. You can learn how to be an instructor as well as get general safety tips.
Last 20 seconds. Why should people check out the Refuse to Be a Victim program?
Because it's the base of all safety. You know, it starts with awareness, goes into how criminals think, goes into all the latest technology and security scams, and it's a great way to overall just enhance your safety.
Perfect. Eric Lipp, NRA Refuse to Be a Victim program. What's that website one more time?
rtbav.nra.org.
Eric, thanks for what you do. Thanks for being on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome back. Cam and Company, Cam Edwards, your host. Coming up on the program next hour, Ronnie Ezell from Chicago Guns Matter. Also, Tom King of the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association. More on what's going on in New York's 21st Congressional District, where, I mean, honestly, any issue, when you've got a candidate coming out, video showing him saying, I really feel one way, but I can't say that publicly or else I won't win the election. I mean, that's a bad day for that candidate. Even if friendly media there locally decides not to cover this story, still a really bad day for the candidate. And we'll talk about it with Tom King, because it's what's happening in upstate New York. Want to get to some of the other big stories of the day. In fact, you know what? I tell you what, let's stay with that for just a second if we can. Because I mentioned that this local paper, the Post Star, has not covered this. They were the ones that actually had this no-lie pledge that they presented to both candidates in the 21st Congressional District. And they ran a big story just a few days ago, July the 7th. Cobb takes papers, no lies pledge. Yeah. New York 21st Democratic Congressional candidate Tedra Cobb has formally committed to the Post-Star's no lies pledge. The newspaper's editorial board published an editorial on July the 1st asking Cobb and U.S. Representative Elise Stefanik, Republican from Willsboro, not to lie when talking to the media or voters. Oh, Cameron. I mean, right there. Oh, geez. Airing television advertisements or when posting to their Facebook pages, the editorial concluded by saying the paper was waiting to hear from the candidates. Editorial board is made up of publisher Robert Forsey, editor Ken Tingley, who has this column today about why he's not a gun owner that the Post-Star is promoting. Stefanik has not formally responded, but Cobb on Thursday submitted a letter to the editor to the paper, reiterated her support for the pledge in a phone interview on Friday, saying, quote, past behavior is the best predictor of future behavior, and I have run for a year against 9 other people. I've been respectful of them. I've run by race with integrity and spoken about who I am, why I'm running, and why people should vote for me. When asked what she would do if political action committees came in and ran misleading or false ads, Cobb said her campaign did not have any control over that. Quote, that's why we need campaign finance reform. We saw swift vote Veterans for Truth, which weren't truthful at all. Cobb says she plans to stick to the issues. Quote, I've proven myself to be honest and forthright, and I will continue to be that way. I will talk about the issues. Elise Stefanik has a record of votes that do harm in this district. I will speak about those. The Post-Star newspaper also announced a new policy saying they would not quote campaign spokespeople or other representatives. It will use only direct quotes spoken by the candidate or direct quotes from official statements made by the candidate in news releases. So I guess the local paper there, the Post-Star, if Tedra Cobb, this candidate who lied
and you know, told the woman, told a group of gun control activists off the record, hey, I really do support this gun ban. I mean, it just came up in conversation today. I told this woman, I support this gun ban, but I can't say anything publicly about supporting this gun ban. Well, I wish you would, she said, but I told her the Moms Demand Action lady said I shouldn't, said if I support this gun ban, I will lose the election. And that's just the political reality that we live in. I mean, again, this pledge that the Post Star presented here was all about not lying to the voters, not lying when talking to the media, not lying when airing television ads or when posting their Facebook pages. I would say if you hold a position in private that you can't state publicly because stating so publicly would cause you to lose the election, I would think that that would be not very forthright and honest. And again, one kind of wonders why the Post Star newspaper hasn't gotten on this story. But maybe it's because of, I don't know. Maybe they support this candidate. Maybe this was sort of supposed to be a gotcha to Elise Stefanik, who hasn't signed this this no lies pledge. Why won't Elise Stefanik pledge not to tell lies? Maybe that's what they were going for. I don't know. As I mentioned, the paper right now. Oh, here we go. 12 minutes ago, Cameron. It's up at the Post Star. Cobb's stance on guns under microscope. After secret video surfaces. Tedra Cobb, the Democratic candidate running for Congress in the 21st Congressional District, was slammed by Republicans. Oh, gosh. Guy, that's the lead.
Republicans pounce.
Slammed by Republicans. After an apparently undercover video surfaced of her saying that she thinks assault weapons should be banned, but she cannot say that. The video was posted by the YouTube channel Democratic Tracking. It was picked up on Tuesday by the Washington Free Beacon, a national conservative news site. Oh, my theory is starting to coalesce here. In the video, Ms. Cobb is discussing gun policy with a group of teens who are apparently volunteers. Ms. Cobb discusses an event she was at earlier that day. Quote, when I was at this thing today, the first table I was at, a woman asked, what do you think about assault rifles? And I said, they should be banned. And I said, I want you to know, Cindy, I cannot say that in public. And she said, well, I want you to. And I said, I won't win. Ms. Cobb did not make herself available to the Watertown Daily Times for an interview, but her campaign did send her statement. Quote, I was meeting with some young people who were speaking about their very real fear of gun violence in their schools. I told them the truth, that the, jeez, holy moly. This is a tough segment to get through with family-friendly radio, Cameron. When the statement about a lie says, I told them the truth. That the inability of our political system to talk about issues and practical solutions without politics getting in the way is why Washington has not made any progress to protect them. Even on things we agree on, like universal background checks and prohibiting the mentally ill from getting a firearm. What a crock. That's the statement. That's the statement. There's no more to tell you. There's no more for me to read. Let me read that to you again. The question that was posed to the campaign went something like, does the campaign have a comment on the video that shows Tedra Cobb telling these students, oh, yeah, I want to ban these guns, but I can't say that publicly or I'll lose. And the campaign said, we'll get back to you. And then this is what they got back to them with. I was meeting with some young people who were speaking about their very real fear of gun violence in their schools. I told them the truth, that the inability of our political system to talk about issues and practical solutions without politics getting in the way is why Washington has not made any progress to protect them. Even on things we agree on, like universal background checks and prohibiting the mentally ill from getting a firearm, even now she can't talk about banning guns. Even now her statement about, well, yeah, I want to ban guns, but I can't say that publicly, doesn't actually talk about banning guns, Cameron. That is amazing. Wow. Oh, I'm sure this will satisfy everybody. Okay, more from the Post Star newspaper and their coverage of this story. This is fascinating to me. The video published on July the 9th, according to the title of the video, is recorded on May 18th of this year. During the course of the video, Ms. Cobb mentions traveling to Jefferson County to participate in a parade. And on May 19th, she did march in the Watertown Armed Forces Day Parade. The Free Beacon story drew immediate criticism from the campaign of incumbent Elise Stefanik and other Republicans. New video footage has exposed Tedra Cobb for lying to voters about her position on the Second Amendment, wrote Chris Martin, regional press secretary of the National Republican Congressional Committee. So much for that no lies pledge she signed less than a week ago. Mr. Martin was referring to an editorial from the Glen Falls Post Star asking both Ms. Cobb and Ms. Stefanik to pledge not to lie during the campaign. Ms. Cobb responded in a letter to the editor, "This is an easy commitment for me to make. I will conduct the general election campaign in the same manner I conducted my primary campaign with honesty and integrity." Ms. Cobb went on to ask for fact-checking of both candidates. Quote, "Having made the commitment you requested, I humbly request that the Post Star hold me and the incumbent, should she also choose to honor your request, accountable to the promise to conduct an honest campaign." The pledge was quickly turned into a bludgeon against her by various North Country Republicans. Oh, my God. She lied to you. She lied to you, Post Star. And this is the reporting? This charge has been used as a cudgel against her by Republicans. She took your pledge. She said, I swear. After she told these gun control advocates, I've been lying about my position so I can get elected. And Republicans pounce. Gee, many Christmas. Oh, there's so much more. Oh, my gosh. This local story is awful. I want to send this to Selena Zito, but it would make her cry. It really would. It would ruin her day. All right, stick around. You got to stick around. Hour 2 of Cam and Company, fueled by Hornady. It's coming up right after this.
We're talking with Bill Romanelli, spokesman for Project Child Safe. And Bill, it's good to speak with you today.
Thanks for joining us. It's good to be here.
You bet. Project Child Safe, I mean, it's been around for a while, but for folks who have not heard of this program, or they've been living under a rock somewhere, what is Project Child Safe all about?
Sure. It was started in 1999 by the National Shooting Sports Foundation, and it's a firearm safety education program that works on two fronts. First is just getting tools and information out to people about storing guns safely, firearm safety in general. The real emphasis is on storing firearms responsibly when they're not in use. And then to make that happen, they put their money where their mouth is, and they provide free gun locks to law enforcement agencies all over the country to hand out in their communities. 38 million locks and counting so far.
That is amazing. And do you have any idea what the impact of this has been around the country?
Well, there was a report just issued by the National Safety Council that said fatal firearms accidents had dropped to their lowest level since record-keeping began. That's huge. And then there was recently a GAO report that also said that doing programs like this, making free gun locks available, actually does change behavior and people store firearms more responsibly. So nobody else can take more credit for that than NSSF for making that happen.
Yeah, and you know, again, I mean, as you say, there's a whole variety of things that goes into seeing those numbers go down. There's not just one cause, but every aspect that actually is effective, you know, can help us bring these numbers down even more. I mean, we're at historically low levels of accidental injuries and deaths involving firearms. I think that's a fantastic thing. I mean, I don't know about you know, our opponents here, but I think it's a good thing that we have a safer society.
Absolutely, and we'd like to see the trend keep going in the right direction, for sure. And to your point, you know, you can't say enough good things about the training program, the NRA firearm safety training that goes on. It plays a huge part in all of this, you bet.
Yeah. So tell me, I mean, how easy is it for local law enforcement to be a part of this? And you know, if I wanted to just reach out to my, you know, county sheriff's office, could I do so as a civilian and say, hey, you guys should talk to NSSF about this?
Absolutely. If they can type on a computer and they have 2 minutes, they can become a partner and they can order locks. It's that simple. They just log on to our website, which is projectchildsafe.org. There's a button right there for law enforcement. The form comes up. They fill it out, tell us how many locks they want, and the locks will arrive 3 weeks later. That simple.
And how many states are you all in right now? Are you across the entire country?
We're operating in every state, and we've given locks out also in all five U.S. territories. So we're nationwide.
Wow, that is amazing. All right, so what are your plans for 2018? Obviously, this is not a new program, but you're constantly, I imagine, are looking at ways to reinvigorate this, put it into you know, new directions and new outlets. So what do you have on tap for this year?
You bet. The biggest thing we're really doing is what we've done through some research is we found out that while we're reaching the shooting sports and the hunting community very well, the inner city urban communities, basically people who buy guns for self-protection but not necessarily for hunting or shooting sports, our messages need to reach deeper into those markets. We need to get more information and resources out to them. So that's going to be a big focus for us in 2018 is reaching those audiences.
Yeah, and I would imagine, too, that you know, you almost have like a double whammy because in a lot of those urban environments, the impetus is on don't own a gun at all, right? So gun ownership is sort of a taboo thing as opposed to, okay, well, if you are going to own a gun, be safe about it. That's not the message that we're getting, unfortunately, from a lot of local governments. Their message is, don't own one of these things.
Right, and it's just, you know, it's self-defeating because it doesn't work. People are not going to stop owning a gun simply because their local mayor says that they shouldn't own one. And it's actually alienating the very audience you want to reach with a message like this when they do that.
Absolutely. Well, listen, that's why it's important that you're doing the work that you're doing, and Project Child Safe, again, taking place all around the country. If folks do want more information, what's the best way to find you online, Bill?
Just go to projectchildsafe.org. We even have a button on there for Find a Safety Kit, and they can click on that, enter their state and city, and if there's a local partner, they can just walk in, pick up a gun lock, no questions asked.
That is beautiful. Bill Romanelli with Project Child Safe.
Hey,
thank you so much, sir.
Pleasure.
Good to meet you. Projectchildsafe.org.
NRA TV with Cam Edwards.
Welcome back, Hour 2 of Cam and Company. Fueled by Hornady starts right now. On the program this hour, Roddy Zell of Chicago Guns Matter, Tom King of the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, talking about what's going on in New York's 21st Congressional District. And joining us once again here, Stephen Gutowski of the Washington Free Beacon is back with us since we've got this update. Now the Post-Star newspaper with the first response from Tedra Cobb to this video coming out, showing her talking to gun control activists, telling them, you know, I was at this luncheon today, and a woman said, you should, you support banning assault weapons. She said, I want to ban them. Well, you should say that. Well, I can't say that, or I won't win. And the mom's man asked, people told me, don't say it, or you won't win. Stephen, have you seen this statement now from Tedra Cobb?
Yeah, I just saw it recently. It's in, was it the Post and Star? It's a local paper up there.
Yeah, you asked for a comment from the campaign, right, when you wrote your story yesterday?
Yeah, of course. We always ask for a comment from the relevant parties. And, you know, it's interesting because I got a message back from her press secretary yesterday, but apparently her press secretary was ill. She was in the hospital, and she was forwarding my request on to the campaign manager, but then I never heard back from anyone.
Hmm. Well, I mean, here's a statement. This is from Tedra Cobb. Quote, I was meeting with some young people who were speaking about their very real fear of gun violence in their schools. I told them the truth, that the inability of our political system... Stop laughing, Stephen. That the inability of our political system to talk about issues and practical solutions without politics getting in the way is why Washington has not made any progress to protect them. Even on things we agree on, like universal background checks and prohibiting the mentally ill from getting a firearm. Stephen, have you noticed that in her statement she didn't actually talk about telling these students, I want to ban these guns, but if I say so, I won't win the election?
I just am taken aback by the the quote that she was telling them the truth in her statement. In her statement, where she was explicitly saying that she has to lie.
Yeah.
Right, just the irony of it was something.
I've got Alanis Morissette in my head for some reason right now. I can't figure out what's going on. But, yeah, it's amazing. And I got to tell you, this Post-Star newspaper, they're the paper that had that that No Lies pledge. They finally wrote up this story. They're one of the last ones to cover it. And, Stephen, you got to go back through and you got to read it. I mean, it's amazing. It's a typical Republicans pounce narrative. It's mm-hmm. so not about this candidate being caught telling these gun control activists, I have to say one thing even though I believe something else if I want to get elected. That's just sort of casually dismissed away, and instead these Republicans are just attacking the candidate over this. It's amazeballs.
Yeah, it is. It's always interesting because this sort of thing happens a lot here at the Free Beacon, where we'll break a story, we'll reach out for comment to the person that is the subject of the story, and then for some reason they don't have the time or opportunity to respond to us, but magically their response shows up in another outlet's story, which happens to all framed in a much more positive light.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, listen, I look forward to your continued reporting, because I'm sure that you'll be reporting the latest updates here. Thank you for coming back on the program, sir, and I look forward to talking again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Stephen Gutowski joining us from the Washington Free Beacon. Yes, here you go. The Post-Star newspaper. The pledge that, again, they asked her to sign was quickly turned into a bludgeon against her by various North Country Republicans, including Ms. Stefanik's campaign spokeswoman, or spokesman, Eleni Alcevar, and Franklin County Republican Chairman Ray Scollin. Mr. Alcevar writing on Twitter, Tedra Cobb, now officially the worst Democratic House candidate of the cycle, admitted raising taxes, now caught on camera violating her pledge to be honest with New York 21 voters. I mean, I'm not sure that's a bludgeon. That seems to be sort of a, I mean, it's an opinion that she's the worst Democratic House candidate of the cycle. She's got to be up there, though, right, Cameron? I mean, that's top five.
Probably. Absolutely.
Franklin County Republican Chairman Ray Scollin shared the story with the comment, Tedra Cobb misleading New York 21 gun owners' secret plan to ban guns of elected New York Governor Cuomo Safe Act is passed in the dead of night to circumvent voters. Now Tedra Cobb wants to do the same in D.C. Well, she may want to have that vote midday or whatever. I mean, we don't know when she would like to have that vote. What we do know is that what she's told these gun control activists is, and at least one woman that she was having at a luncheon with, yes, I would like to ban these guns. But I can't say that right now because I won't win if I say that. And not only is that my opinion, but that's the opinion of Moms Demand Action. They've told me, don't talk about banning guns, even though you want to, or you won't get elected. Now, listen to this. This is, again, this is an ostensible news story from the Post-Star, the very paper that presented this pledge to the candidate that I suspect they really want to endorse. I'm going out on a limb here, but I really think that the Post-Star wants to write an endorsement of Tedra Cobb closer to Election Day. Here's what they write. In the video, Ms. Cobb does not say that she would support an assault weapons ban as a congressional representative. As the Free Beacon reported, she does have a number of gun reforms proposed already on her campaign website, but none mention a weapons ban. So in other words, hey, she didn't say that she'd support it in Congress. She just said that she wants one, and she's running for Congress. So, Cameron, clearly it's really too much of a reach for these awful Republicans to conclude that just because she says she supports a gun ban and she's running for Congress, that she would actually support a gun ban in Congress. That's a bridge too far.
And she will get away with this because hashtag Republicans pounce.
Mere supposition, yes. In her statement, Ms. Cobb did not say that she supported or opposed an assault weapons ban, saying she was focused on other reforms that were more likely to pass. Quote, there are a lot of common sense things we need to do right now to make our kids safer without getting stuck in a stalemate issue like an assault weapons ban that would not pass this Congress or would not get signed by this president. It's a moot point, and voters in the North Country know that. Let's talk about the things where there is common ground, where we can make progress right now. Our kids deserve no less. So that's it. So I don't want to talk about it. I mean, I support it. I want one, and I've told people that I can't say that publicly or else I'd lose. But now publicly, what I'm going to say is, you know, it just wouldn't pass, and it wouldn't get signed by this president. Well, here's the thing. I'm relatively certain that the Post-Star is going to give Ms. Cobb a pass on this. The Post-Star says Ms. Cobb's campaign did not answer follow-ups from the Times about how she felt about the meeting being videotaped or whether she would vote for an assault weapons ban if it were introduced to Congress. Yeah, she doesn't want to answer that. Because, again, you've already told these people that you support it. So if one's introduced in Congress, and remember, she's running not to be in the minority. See, that's why this is a cop-out answer for Tedra Cobb to say, well, it's a moot point. Congress wouldn't pass it. You're running to be in the majority. You're running to take over the House so that you can pass the Democratic agenda. So it's a fair question to ask, if you were in the majority, if you get your way, if you win your election, and if, look, here's the thing. If Tedra Cobb wins New York's 21st congressional district, which went for Donald Trump by 14 points 2 years ago, we're going to be talking about a blue wave election. Right? I mean, a Trump plus 14 district going blue. Yeah, that's probably going to be looking at a blue wave. So you could be looking at tetracod in the majority, cob in the majority. So it is a fair question to ask of a candidate, how would you vote if this came before you? And it is a complete cop-out, maybe a cob-out, Cameron. There's my political dad joke for the day. It is it's a cob-out for her to say, well, it's a moot point. Why even talk about this stuff? Post Star says, Ms. Cobb received the Moms Demand Action Gun Sense Candidate Distinction during the Democratic primary. During the video, Ms. Cobb refers to advice she got from a Moms Demand Action volunteer, apparently named Patricia Plew. Trish Plew, who is described as a volunteer. I've also seen her cited by media in New York as the social media manager for the New York State Moms Demand Action chapter. Cobb said, Trisha Plew says, don't say you want an assault rifle ban because you will not win. Later in the video, the Post Star says Ms. Cobb jokes with the teens about being moderate Democrats, and some of the unidentified teens say they disagree with the approach taken by Democratic candidates who are further to the left. Ms. Cobb criticizes the tone some Democrats use in talking to conservative voters. Quote, it's just the constant, you guys are stupid, you guys are stupid, it's just ridiculous. So that's the good news. Tendra Cobb won't tell you you're stupid. She'll just treat you like you're stupid. She won't come right out and say you're a moron. But she apparently thinks you are, because she thinks that she can believe one thing, support something, and not talk about it publicly because it would cost her the election. And that voters won't care about it. That voters won't see that as dishonesty. That voters won't see that as not being forthright, which is what she promised to be. You know, again, you can, and I'm sure there are going to be all kinds of folks playing semantics. Well, did she lie? She didn't say that she didn't support an assault. She just didn't talk about it. Even when she was asked directly about it, she refused to talk about it. So did she really lie? Here's the thing. She promised to be honest and forthright. And when you are asked point blank, what do you think about a gun ban? And you don't answer the question, you're not being forthright. When it turns out you don't answer the question because you think it's going to cost you the election, because the voters aren't going to like your answer, you're not being forthright. You want to debate whether or not that's a lie? Be my guest. I imagine the voters are going to have a lot to say about this, too. All right. So that's the latest out of New York 21. Odds, Cameron, that the Post Star has an editorial this week about defending the candidate here?
Well, considering the fact that you found the story on the website, they haven't tweeted it yet. I tweeted it for them and put at Post Star in there for them. But the at Post Star has not tweeted their own story yet, so we'll see.
They have a link in their story. It's way down at the bottom, but they have a link to the video. And it's all 17 and a half minutes. So I'll give them credit for that. One of the last ones to report the story. And again, the narrative seems to be Republicans pounce, as opposed to, can you believe this candidate actually signed our pledge and then said this stuff? So I'm going out on a limb, and I think it's a pretty sturdy one. I'm predicting that, that there will be an op-ed. They will not ignore this. But it will be a very expulgatory op-ed. It will, Republicans are playing games. This is what it's going to be, Cameron. This is why we asked the campaigns to sign a no-lies pledge to begin with. Because Tedra Cobb did not lie. She may not have told us her true feelings about an issue, but she didn't lie to us. She just didn't talk about it. And now that's been turned by these conservatives into a lie.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes. Oh, well, okay.
Can you write an op-ed and see if they'll print it?
Just give it to them. Sure. Actually, you know what? I'll play Karnak. I'll go home tonight and I'll write an op-ed and I'll seal it up in an envelope.
Right. Oh, that's what I meant. Right. You write it and you see how close it is to what they write.
Okay. Yes, I think I can do that. I can at least write down some bullet points.
Right, exactly. And here's the thing. I'm not Nostradamus. You don't have to be Nostradamus to know how this is going to go, right? They'll excuse away the lies. They'll excuse away the dishonesty. They'll excuse away the lack of forthrightness. They'll use it to attack Republicans somehow. And then they'll finish it off with a dash of, we need common sense gun controls. Whether or not that includes a quote-unquote assault weapons ban, we can decide that later. But what we know is that it's time for real common sense gun safety. That's how it will end. I'll write that down in the bullet points as well, Cameron. Think the Post Star is hiring? I mean, I could probably just do that on a freelance basis for them if they needed it.
Probably shouldn't call it bullet points.
Yeah, good point. All right, well, because that might be rhetoric, right? And again, there's only one side that can get away with saying anything and doing anything that they want right now. And it ain't us. All right, when we come back, after a quick timeout, Ron Ezell from Chicago Guns Matter joins us on the program. Tom King of the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association. Later in the hour, we are less than an hour away from our hero deal and our good guy of the day. So stick around. We've got much more Cam and Company coming up next.
Speaking with Dirk Grove from NRA Store, I'm always excited to talk about, Dirk, what's new at NRA Store? What do you got for us today?
We've got a couple exciting items. One of the most important things that I wanted to talk about was, as you all know, there are some folks out there that have changed their cooler brands lately, and we have a really nice cooler from Orca. It's a 20-quart cooler. It's roto-molded with 2 inches of insulation, so it's supposed to keep ice cold for 10 days, which is
wow.
Kind of amazing to me.
Yeah.
It's 20 quarts, so it's a manageable size, and it's a nice black, and it has a nice gold, huge NRA on the top of the cooler.
I heard a little something about that cooler thing, so it's great to see NRA stepping up and bringing a product like this forward. It's a beautiful-looking cooler, and it's perfect timing because, you know, it's getting to be that outdoor weather time out there, Dirk, all across the country. So that's awesome.
Exactly.
Yes.
And folks that are going to carry those coolers to the beach will want to wear our new T-shirt.
Ah, good segue, it Dirk, says, by the way. Very good.
It says everything you need to say. It says, and I am the NRA. And it's red, white, and blue. And it comes in men's and ladies' sizes. So we're not going to leave anyone out. And it's must wear for the summer.
Awesome. Now, Dirk, I need to ask you a point of personal preference. When they're men's sizes, they're good men's sizes. Like a guy of my size, I'm so frustrated when I get a shirt, I wear a 2X, and it doesn't fit me very well. I imagine these are good roomy shirts.
They're good and roomy, but, you know, we do offer 3X if you would like
there
to
you
avail yourself of that as well.
I'll take that in, Dirk. I'd rather the shirt be too big than too small, so that's awesome. The I Am the NRA shirt, perfect for the for summertime wearing.
And so, you know, we know that if you're going to be wearing that shirt, you might be supporting us politically, but there's a really good chance that you're also going to be a shooter. And so because of that, we have some things specifically for shooters.
Good.
One of the things we have is our new updated cleaning mats.
Ooh.
Our cleaning mats, we started out with cleaning mats a few years ago, and we sold just a boatload of them. We only offered AR-15 and 1911. Now, we've updated these with all new diagrams, and they are heavily researched diagrams, so I'm very confident in the accuracy. But we offer AR-15. We offer 1911, we offer Glock Generation 4, and we offer a Remington 870. And by the way, the 870 is long enough to actually place your 870 on it while you're cleaning it.
Awesome.
They're solvent proof, moisture proof. They'll keep your kitchen table nice and clean while you're cleaning your firearms.
Perfect. Speaking with Dirk Grove from NRA Store, what else you got, Dirk?
I got one more thing today. We've been working with the makers of Sport Ear. They make hearing protection. They've got some earbuds. They call them the Axel Ghost Strike. What's really cool about these things is they amplify sounds up to 6 times, but any time they detect a noise that's higher than 85 decibels, then they automatically suppress and protect your ears.
Wow, that's cool. It's so great, Dirk. There's so much good high technology, and it's so important to protect your hearing when you're a shooter. So it's good to see the NRA store once again stepping up with a product like this for folks who are out there shooting. That's good stuff.
But we know our audience.
You think you figured it out by now, huh, Dirk Grove?
I think so, yeah. And by the way, the audience can always find us at, they can get a new catalog if they like, but it's 1-800-877-6007 or nrastore.com.
There you go. How easy. I always look forward to getting my catalog in the mail, Dirk Grove. Love it. Love it when you're on the program. We appreciate it. NRA Store, check out all these great new products and all the other stuff from NRA Store. Thank you, Dirk Grove.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Welcome back to Cam and Company. Cam Edwards, your host, at Cam Edwards on Twitter. Also, we'll make sure you follow along at Cam and Company during the show. Tom King of the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association. Joins us in just a little bit. Right now, I want to welcome to the program our friend from Chicago Guns Matter, Rhonda Ezell, Ms. underscore Ezell on Twitter. How are you today, Rhonda?
I'm good, Cam. How are you today?
I am fantastic. I appreciate you coming on the program, and I was really pleased to see your tweets from the March for Our Rights there in Chicago over the weekend. I spoke at the D.C. event, and I know that in Chicago, you know, the March for Our Rights, at least in terms of the media coverage, largely overshadowed by anti-gun protesters who shut down the portions of the Dan Ryan Expressway, all in the name of stopping violence, Rhonda, but it doesn't seem to have worked. I saw there were 17 people shot, 3 people fatally over the weekend in Chicago, Illinois.
Yes, Grant, but right before I get into the situation with the march and what happened in the city of Chicago, I would like to express some of the positive things that I've done over the week past, you know, as far as going to Washington, D.C. with the D.C. Project. You know, it was 50 women, one from every state there to speak with their legislators as gun owners, as women, as firearm supporters. And I wanted to thank Diana Mueller for putting together such a great project and all the women that I met and had the opportunity to speak with and spend time with. So the DC Project was a positive part of my life at that point in time, being able to go out and speak with the legislators and be a part of that great organization. So I want to say thank you to the DC Project, Diana Mueller, and everyone. So now we can get on to the city of Chicago.
Excellent. Well, listen, I'm glad that you brought that up because, you know, Cameron Gray was out there at the Capitol while y'all were there for the DC Project. And frankly, you know, again, we've got our grassroots activists all around the nation, but they don't always get to our nation's capital. And so, you know, when lawmakers can hear from gun owners like yourself, I think it is really, really important. Before we get to what happened this past week, and let me just ask you a little bit more about the D.C. Project. You know, you talk about being there with other women who are Second Amendment advocates, and I know you and I have talked about this before in Chicago. That can be kind of a lonely fight. I know that there are other Second Amendment advocates there in your city, but sometimes it must feel like you're a little outnumbered by the number of anti-gun activists there in your community, Rhonda.
That doesn't bother me, Grant. I don't thrive off of other people's action. I'm only responsible for the things that I can do and what I'm responsible for. So as far as me being in this fight, I don't really focus on how many other people are doing it, how many people are against what I'm doing, because what I do know is what we've done thus far has, we have set landmark cases in place that are going to be here for eternity. So I can't waste my time and energy concerned about, am I the only one or what other people are doing, you know, fighting against what I stand for. So I don't want to waste my time on that.
All right. Well, listen, you weren't wasting your time this weekend. And to be fair, I don't think the folks who were marching felt like they were wasting their time. You know, they're trying to raise awareness of an issue. And maybe that's one of the few things, Rhonda, that gun control activists and gun owners could probably agree on, is that the national media really doesn't focus on the violence in Chicago. You know, a headline, 17 people shot, 3 people fatally wounded. It's not talked about nationally. It is seen as a local news story. And, you know, I think that you do have a lot of folks on both sides of the issue, certainly in Chicago, who would love to see this become more of an issue. The dispute is not, does this need to get more attention? I think the dispute is, how do we make things better? And those folks who are marching
to shut down the Dan Ryan Expressway over the weekend, say, well, we make things better by making it harder for people like Rhonda Zell to legally be a gun owner, and maybe that'll make it harder for a criminal to acquire a gun than down the road.
Not at all, Grant. Not at all, Cam. I am so sorry because I keep calling you.
That's
Grant,
all right.
I
know. It's all right. We're good.
The march itself, first and foremost, it was illegal, shutting down an interstate. So they're not making anything harder for gun owners. Let's be real here. What has taken place is illegal. Now there's war of words again with the mayor and the governor, so I'll let them sort that out. But what they did do was inconvenience millions of commuters. They did nothing to stop the violence in the city of Chicago, because the same evening, seven people were shot the very same day. Three more people were killed on Sunday. We had a stabbing on mass transit on Monday where a woman attacked a man and he defended himself against her, and he ended up defending himself where he took her life. So it's not about me caring or anyone caring. This is just all political rhetoric. They will not go to those blocks and those streets where these seven shootings had taken place, or the four fatal shootings that has taken place after they marched. I don't see them out there, and they're not going to be there. So this just goes to show you that this is all about getting attention, because it does nothing to combat the gang violence. This is not gun violence. So at the end of the day, if they want to make good on what they say they stand for, go to those neighborhoods where those shootings just occurred just the other day, or the same night when you marched. Go to those families and talk to those people.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, Rhonda, you're right. They'll march down where the cameras will be there, but they're not going to go in to those neighborhoods. They're not going to talk to the gang members that are responsible for the violence. And sadly, you know, they're not out there advocating for getting tough on those gang members, right? They're out there saying, well, the way to address this is more gun control laws. And you know, the police know who the bad guys are. The folks who live in these neighborhoods know who's causing the violent crime. They know who the ringleaders are.
But
you know, law-abiding gun owners, you guys are an easier target. It's easier to, if you're a politician, to say, well, we need to do something. We can start here. Of course, it's not the end-all, be-all, but we can at least do something. We can start here with the legal gun owners.
Well, obviously, this is getting old. And at some point in time, they're going to have to come to a concrete solution and do something different. Because each and every time they want to march and protest or ask for more gun control, we see nothing being done in the actual neighborhoods where the crimes have taken place. So until they start to go to those families or go to the individuals that are committing the crimes, the gangs, the blocks, knowing where the firearms are coming from, it is useless to waste taxpayers' dollars doing illegal things such as shutting down an interstate.
Do you think they changed any hearts and minds by shutting down the interstate, Rhonda?
Of course not. Absolutely not. Because they could have caused lives. If I was an individual that had gotten a call for a transplant, or an individual needed medical assistance and they could not get to that destination, guess what? They would have not received a transplant, or they would not have been able to give birth, or whatever the case may be. So when you start looking at the things that they thought was a good idea, in actuality, it was not. It was wrong. It was illegal. It did nothing to stop the violence. And they said they're going to continue. So now we're going to see what the Illinois State Police does, the governor does, and how they handle this, because this is unacceptable.
Talking again with Rhonda Zell of Chicago Guns Matter. And Rhonda, listen, as always, I appreciate everything that you're doing there in Chicago and around the nation in support of our right to keep and bear arms. It is so good talking with you. And I hope we get a chance to see you again in person here before long.
Sure, Cam. And we have to get that situation that we talked about that you're supposed to be doing. So we'll get to that. we'll get some emails out. And thank you guys for having me today.
Always a pleasure. Ronnie Ezell with us again on Twitter at Ms_Ezell. And, of course, on the web at ChicagoGunsMatter.org. Tom King, head of the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, going to join us on the program here in just a little bit. We'll talk more about what's going on in New York State's 21st Congressional District. But let's talk about what's going on in Tallahassee, Florida, if we can, for just a moment or two. Ran across this story from the Tallahassee Democrat earlier today. Dean Crouch was a store manager at Academy Sports and Outdoors until very recently, actually until yesterday. And back on June 29th, Dean was at work, and a guy came in and tried to steal a handgun from the firearms counter. This guy named Jason White walked in. He asked to look at the handgun at the firearms counter. He was handed the gun, and then he decided to just run out towards the front door. Dean Crouch, as store manager, was watching what was going on. He and another employee then tackled and subdued Jason White at the exit doors, recovered the firearm, as well as a stolen backpack, five boxes of ammunition, and two magazines for the handgun. White was then taken into the store's office while police were en route. While he was in the office, he apparently admitted to stealing the firearm and threatened to shoot people with it. Court records indicate those threats. White, according to court records, said he and his family were being threatened by an unknown person and he wanted the gun to, quote, kill him. Officers wrote in their report, he repeatedly said, I stole it and I admit to it and I will steal again when I get out of jail. Now, that happened back on June 29th. Yesterday, Dean Crouch, the store manager, was fired from Academy Sports. Yeah. He has already lawyered up. His attorney, Ryan Hobbs, told the Tallahassee Democrat Academy's decided to, instead of treating him like the hero he is, they terminated his employment effective immediately because he put his hands on Mr. White. By the way, worth noting, Mr. Crouch did not know this at the time. But hours before he was taken into custody, apparently White stole two handguns from a pawn shop on South Adams Street in Tallahassee, Florida. Hobbs said his client is considering a lawsuit for wrongful termination. The way he sees it, Crouch may have saved lives by stopping this guy. His attorney said, this is not something that happens for Mr. Crouch in his everyday life. I think he was thinking there's a man running out of the store with a gun in his hand, and his coworkers following him from the firearm area, screaming, stop that man, something had to be done. And he was going to be the one to do it. Academy Sports spokeswoman Elise Hasbrook says she couldn't comment on specific personnel matters or policies. However, she says Crouch's actions and his termination were handled in accordance with the Texas-based company's policies. Quote, while the incident ended without injury, actions inconsistent with corporate policies were taken. We addressed the matter with the local store and individuals involved. Tallahassee Democrat says Crouch has worked at the store for more than 2 years. He's married with a family, now without a job to support them. The attorney said maybe the corporate policy should be revisited. He said, my instincts tell me that they're concerned more about people like Mr. White suing them for being stopped in the course of a theft than they are about rewarding or acknowledging in a positive manner that Mr. Crouch may have saved lives. I suspect that it is correct. I suspect that this was not a decision that anybody in the C-level suites there at Academy felt good about. I don't think there was a discussion about who gets to fire this guy. I imagine that there was, I'd like to think anyway, that there was a feeling of, you know, it sucks we got to fire this guy, but gosh, I mean, we got to think about the liability involved here. And we, you know, if we don't fire him, then our other employees going to think this is the right thing to do, you know, to tackle the guy, and what happens if we get sued? And, you know, I mean, I'm glad the police were able to take him into custody, but boy, we just can't have this happening. Here's the thing. If that's the attitude, and this is just my free advice for Academy, you better start a tweet storm today talking about the need to change liability law in this country and what a crummy thing it was that you had to let this guy go. Because I don't really think there's a way that Academy comes out looking good here unless they state, you know, this was, we didn't want to do this, we took no joy in doing this, and we really wish that the law was different and that we could act differently. But and maybe, you know what, we're going to start a fund here to try to change this law so that we don't have to fire heroes like this. Because otherwise, again, I mean, what do you want then? You want, let's even take this outside the arena of academy. What do we want as a society? Do we want a society where if you see something, you just say something to somebody else? And maybe that somebody else gets there in time to stop the something that you saw, but maybe not. But that's as far as your responsibility goes. If you see something, just say something to somebody else. Or do we want a society where if you see something and you don't have time to say something, you act, you respond? That's the society that I want. That's the culture that I want to live in. That we don't wait when we can't wait. But I worry, and I think that there are a lot of folks out there who really do want us to live in a society where if you see something, just say something. It doesn't matter how bad the something is. It's not your responsibility to get involved. It's not your responsibility to step up to try to stop something bad from happening. You just say something. And if that responsibility isn't placed on us as individuals, that responsibility is placed entirely on law enforcement, who, by the way, we will also trash at any given opportunity, right? And we will, attack the police as a profession. We will attack law enforcement as individual members of that profession. While at the same time telling everybody that they're the only ones who could act if something bad happens. We'll try to make their job as difficult and as hard as possible. Put them in, you know, as much a jeopardy of their lives as possible. And they should be happy that they have a job, you know, to go to every day. That should be their reward. That's not really a recipe for a highly functioning society. At least in my opinion. But we'll see what happens there in Tallahassee. What do you think, Cam? You think this, again, I try not to immediately hop on my high horse and we should boycott Academy. I mean, I try to see where everybody's right. Coming from in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
But I just really don't see how this company comes off looking good. No. Unless they say this sucks and we really didn't want to have to let this guy go, and here's what we're doing to ensure that we don't have to do this.
And your idea of a tweet storm sounds like such a great idea. But it just would never happen, and it's sad because you're right. They are more worried about liability laws. And yes, regardless of Academy sports, this is an issue nationwide of a litigious society and liability laws making for bad rules like the one you just talked about. And no, they won't do it, unfortunately. And it's too bad because this guy's now out of a job. It's too bad.
It really is. Now I suspect. What we'll see here in the near future is that a local gun store will be offering this guy a job. In fact, I would imagine they're probably going to be local in multiple local independent shops that will reach out to this individual. We'll try to make that offer. We've seen that within this.
Why wouldn't you want this guy as an employee? He's obviously a good, solid employee who will protect your store. And part of protecting your store is protecting the inventory.
Absolutely. And, being that this is Tallahassee, who knows? The Jaguars may even offer him a tryout because he showed some good open field tackling skills, Cameron. And,
you know, you're thinking Jacksonville.
They could use that this year. I did. I know. I mean, Tallahassee's not that far, all things considered, is it?
It is. I don't know. Now I'm thinking about it. It's across the state on the top. I think it's in my mind, this seems pretty far, but I'm not Johnny Geography.
I'm going to get grief. Okay, 2.5 hours.
Okay, not that bad.
So there you go. I still think they get offered the tryout. All right, we're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, Tom King, head of the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, will be with us. Top of the hour, hero of the day, deal of the day, good guy, much more. Cam and Company on the way right after this.
Everyone understands the importance of securing our public places. That's why every major corporate campus and office tower, every sporting event, celebrity award show, and government building, all of it is protected by multiple layers of security.
But when it comes to our most precious resource, not gold or oil or precious jewels, our children, we utterly fail to protect them at school every single day. Each day that goes by, our banks and businesses are better protected than our children. That's a national outrage. NRA's School Shield program has already made world-class security resources available to hundreds of American schools. It's free of politics, and it's free of charge. If your child's school isn't protected, ask them to call School Shield today. We're the National Rifle Association of America, guardians of our school children, and freedom's safest place.
It's as patriotic as it gets. A gathering in the heartland of folks from all 50 states. Welders, salesmen, farmers, accountants, soldiers, first responders. Here, we're all the same. Here, we are all race fans. We are proud of our country, proud of our military, proud of our drivers. We proudly stand for our national anthem, and we have a great reverence for names like Yarborough, Earnhardt, Waltrip, and Gordon. Yes, there are other NASCAR races, but this one is special. 500 temper flaring, finger waving, ego busting 15 second laps. And deep into the warm August night, hardly a seat in the last great Coliseum will be used. You see, this isn't just a race. This is America's night race.
My daughter came into the bedroom and she said, "Dad, there's a man in black tactical gear shooting up the Baptist church." Every one of those shots to me represented one of my neighbors, one of my friends, and I ran as fast as I could. Immediately, he came out of the church shooting at me. He hit the truck in front of me, hit the car behind me, hit the house behind me. And I hit him. He had an AR-15, but so did I. And it's not the gun, it's the heart. It's a matter of the heart. I'm not the bravest man in the world or anything, but I was here. I was here, and I could do something. And I had to do something.
I do know what it's like to be vulnerable. I know what it's like to feel like you can't protect your children or yourself. And it's terrifying when you have a spouse, whether it be husband or wife, that's serving overseas thousands of miles away, and you're the only one there to stand up for yourself, to stand up for your home, for your little kid that's right there next to you. I support the Second Amendment because of that. I support the NRA because they support my right to protect my kids. Everybody has a right to life, and you have the right to protect that. And nobody has the right to take it away from you.
Cam Edwards, your host here. Glad you've joined us on a very warm Wednesday in Farmville, Virginia. But, I mean, it is July, so, you know, there you go. Top of the hour, hero of the day, deal of the day, good guy as well. Taking a look, by the way, at the Post Star newspaper Twitter feed. Let's yet to tweet about this story involving the Democratic candidate there in New York's 21st. Now, they are tweeting out legit news stories like Good Samaritan died of heart attack on Mirror Lake. Grand jury indicts Brant Lake camp counselor on 10 felony sex abuse counts. That's a pretty crummy deal. Three dog crates that double as decor, though, Cameron. That was the last tweet about 12 minutes ago. So tweet about dog crates that double as decor. Have yet to tweet about the Democratic candidate there in their congressional district that they cover lying to voters about a support for a gun ban. But if you're looking for a dog crate, and you are a dog lover, Cameron, so there you go. Click that tweet. Meanwhile, we've got Tom King, head of the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, with us on the program. Tom, how are you, sir?
Pretty good, Cam.
Cam, hey, you know, I'm a dog lover, but I'm a gun lover too.
Well, you might be waiting here before the post star. They've got a story up now, talking about this a video involving the Democratic candidate for the 21st congressional district, but nothing that they're really sharing on their social media yet. So I've got to ask you, Tedra Cobb, Tom, on tape now telling gun control activists, teen gun control activists, you know, look, I was at this luncheon today and a woman asked me, will you support banning guns and banning assault weapons? And I said, I support it, but I can't vote for it. I can't say, or I can't say it publicly. And she said, well, I wish you would, but I said, I won't win. And the Moms Demand Action person said, if you talk about how you want to ban these guns, you won't win the election. This happened, Tom, apparently back in May, a few days ago. Tedra Cobb signed a no lies pledge with the local paper there. This would appear to be a lie, in my mind anyway.
It seems that way to me. You know, I mean, if you start out lying, signing a pledge, I mean, you know, there should be some kind of a legal recourse on that.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of wondering, and I don't know if you know what the Post Star newspaper editorial board's position generally leans to. I know that they've got a column out today by one of their editors, Why I'm Not a Gun Owner.
They are like any other larger city newspaper. They're anti-gun.
Okay. All right. So maybe this coverage of this scandal is going to be a little slanted is what you're saying here, Tom.
I'm saying I'm surprised they've gone as far with it as they have.
Well, I don't know if I had anything to do with that, but I have tweeted them several times today asking them where their coverage is. So if it was a bit of shaming that forced them to cover this, I'm glad that I could help out here. I am curious, and Cameron Gray and I were talking about this earlier today. You're right. I mean, we are going to see this sort of slanted coverage. They're going to try to make this a non-story. But for the voters in the 21st Congressional District, can you talk about that district, where it's located, and whether or not you think that that voters are going to become aware of what it was that this candidate actually said?
Oh, yeah. The 21st District is northern New York. It goes from a little bit south of Glens Falls, New York, up along the Vermont border and into the Adirondacks, okay? This is a gun-loving, Second Amendment-loving hunting district that is not very populated because of the, you know, because of the remoteness of the Adirondack Mountains. But I would say that it's a fairly heavy Republican district, and it is extremely heavy pro-gun.
Yeah, I mean, this is a good chunk of upstate New York. When you look at it on a map, you know, the part of New York that is like the Fin. This is the Fin, basically, in New York State. It's where Fort Drum is located. This is where, frankly, it's very common still to this day, Tom, to see the no safe act signs in people's yards, right?
Yeah, I mean, and they're not old weather ones, they're new ones.
You know, and here's the interesting thing. So 2008, this district went for Barack Obama 58-40%.
Mm-hmm.
In 2012, it was Obama 52%. With a victory. 2016, Donald Trump won the district 54-40%. This was,
yeah.
You know, and we talk about these districts around the country that voted for Obama twice and then voted for Donald Trump. This is, again, one of these districts. And so when Democrats are talking about trying to recapture these districts, they're not running the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez-style campaigns that you will find in New York City. They're out there trying to present this face of moderation. And we know in this particular case, Tom, that the face that these candidates are presenting to voters, it's not who they really are.
No, and that's going on all over New York, Cam. You know, if you and all you have to do is go to Tedra's webpage for her election campaign, and you look at her positions, and I mean, You know, she goes through a litany of anti-gun stuff and then related policies, repeal the Tiahrt Amendment, support campaign finance reforms that prevent organizations from bribing their representative with campaign dollars, reject the idea of arming teachers in public schools, require gun safety courses before purchasing firearms. You know, I mean, this is a dyed-in-the-wool anti-gun Democrat, and the sooner the people of New York and around other parts, other liberal areas of the nation learn that the Democrats in these areas have a goal, and that is to take their guns away from them, the better off they're going to be, because they just can't vote for the party of their parents anymore. You know, they have to look at what the issues are, and if they truly love the Second Amendment and love their guns, they have to stand up and say no more.
You know, one of the other things I want to ask about, Tom, the original reporting by Stephen Gataske of the Washington Free Beacon noted that Tedra Cobb went on to say, when she was talking to this lady at this luncheon about how she supported gun bans but couldn't talk about it publicly, she said, quote, "I said Moms Demand Action says," and Tricia Plou, who's apparently the social media leader for the New York State chapter of Moms Demand Action, Tricia Plou said, "Do not say that you want an assault rifle ban because you will not win." Now, again, I don't expect many media outlets to pick up on this, but it is worth noting, and every gun owner in New York State and across the country should understand, these gun control groups are telling candidates, say whatever you have to say to win. When you get in office, you know, you can vote the way we want you to vote. But Moms Demand Action doesn't mind a candidate going silent on one of their preferred issues. In fact, if it's going to help them win, they want that candidate to be silent. They don't want voters to know where these candidates really stand.
Oh, that's entirely right, and I think that it's a little bit more than going silent. I think it's lying about their positions. You know that a lie can be either an overt or a lie of omission, and that's what these people are doing. They're lying about what their positions are, and it has to stop. And the people just have to become aware of the fact that in most cases, if a politician's lips are moving, he's lying.
Well, and that's the thing, Tom. You know, in I would say in this congressional district, in upstate New York, you've already got a lot of cynical voters. They've heard these promises from politicians, right? And and I think they're rightfully skeptical when a politician opens their mouth. When a candidate is caught on tape saying, "I'm not being honest about my position because if I did, it would cost me votes," how do you think that's going to impact the mind of voters there in the 21st in New York?
Oh, I think that that's going to have a huge, huge impact, Cam, because the people up there are, and to borrow a Southern word, are good down-home people, okay? These are the salt of the earth. These are some of the descended to some of the original settlers of that area during pre-revolutionary war times. You know, these are people that understand American values and are willing to stand up and fight for them and to speak their mind.
Talking again with our friend Tom King, head of the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association. Well, listen, Tom, I appreciate you coming on the program, sir. We're going to continue to follow this. So far, we've seen a statement released by Tedra Cobb, but doesn't actually mention or even acknowledge the lie. She just kind of talks about how, well, you know, gun bans are moot points anyway because they wouldn't get passed in this Congress, and so we shouldn't even be talking about this stuff. I don't think that's going to hold up water with the voters either, so we'll see how this plays out there over the next couple of days.
I think it's going to play out very loud and clear to people who are running and living in that district.
Let's hope. Tom King, head of the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, thank you for your time today, sir.
Cam, you take care.
You too. We'll talk again very soon. Make sure you're following what's going on with the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association on Twitter at NYRSPA and online at NYSRPA.org. I'm going to save that story about the dog crates to read over the commercial break, Cameron. I just, let's see, Cassie Sheet 6 hours ago. Boy, I'm pretty sure that Cassie Sheet's just like picked this from one of those clickbait websites, and then they just I just get this image of the social media manager at the Post-Star newspaper right now, like, what do we have to tweet about? What, anybody got anything to tweet about? Well, I just saw this story about dog crates. Yes, that's fine. That's fine. Write it out. Let's tweet it out. Anything to actually ignore this story.
Look at the story. It looks like it's just an ad for Amazon. It's got the, under the picture, it's got a credit to Amazon. And I got to say, as much as I love dogs, that is the ugliest dog crate of all time.
It is a pretty ugly crate. Yeah. And I mean, and I've just got like one of the big plastic ones at the house, but that's still better than that one there. But you know, no taste apparently, and not much evidence of ethics right now either. So there you go. We'll keep following the Post Star newspaper there in Glens Falls, Saratoga, the Lake George region of New York State, as well as Tedra Cobb, who has again released this statement that said absolutely nothing about the controversy. Did actually say, I was being honest when I was talking to these kids about why how Washington's broken. We just can't get anything done. But she has yet to tweet anything out about this. She has yet to actually like say anything in a forum where, again, the public may have a chance to respond. Don't know if she's going to do that over the next 60 minutes. She might be taking a couple of days off of Twitter, which, you know, candidates usually do when they're running for Congress. Every now and then, just, you know, I'm just going to get away from it all. Cam has Twitterless Sundays, so it's kind of hypocritical, Cam, for you to be giving a candidate grief for not tweeting. It's not Sunday. Stick around. Hour 3 of Cam and Company, fueled by Hornady, coming up next.
These are dangerous and challenging times for the Second Amendment. We face an enemy that is willing to spend whatever it takes to drown out our voice and disgrace the name of our great association and our members. They don't just want to ban every semi-automatic firearm in America. They want to repeal the Second Amendment once and for all. For any other organization, these challenges would be too much to face. But the NRA has fought through times like these before. And we know how to win. Back in the 90s, Bill Clinton waged war on gun owners and the Second Amendment. He banned entire classes of semi-automatic firearms. And he thought he had us on the run. But NRA members and Charlton Heston fought back with a principled fury that rallied the entire nation. We taught Bill Clinton a lesson that both his wife and Barack Obama would have been wise to follow. Don't mess with the National Rifle Association of America. No organization has a more proven track record of doing what it takes to win in the toughest times than the NRA. And this is a time for warriors. In times like these, we don't shrink and we don't run. We ready ourselves for battle and get stronger than ever before. This time is no exception. I am proud to announce Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North as the next president of the National Rifle Association of America. I can think of no one better to serve in this critical position. Oliver North is a legendary warrior for American freedom, a gifted communicator, and a skilled leader. He's an unflinching, unapologetic defender of Second Amendment freedom who has earned the enduring respect and admiration of our members. And he strikes genuine fear into the freedom-hating political elites who so desperately wish for a weakened NRA. He understands what all the so-called Washington and media experts still don't. That the strength of this organization will always and forever come from our nearly 6 million members. They can outspend us 1,000 to 1. They can have every talk show, every celebrity, and every elitist college professor in the country. But they will never, ever convince the American people to give up their freedom.
So do you. The almost 6 million members of the National Rifle Association of America, it has been the honor of my life to serve you for all these years, and we're not done yet. I am proud to report that we have never been stronger, never been more energized, and never been more equipped with strong and courageous and battle-proven leaders. And to all of those who dream of stealing the freedom of every law-abiding American, you'd be wise to take a lesson from Bill Clinton, Al Gore, John Kerry, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and every other political retiree who picked the wrong fight with the wrong people. We're the toughest defender of individual freedom this country's ever seen. And we are, now and forever, freedom's safest place.
TV with Cam Edwards.
Welcome back. Hour three of Cam and Company, fueled by Hornady, starts right this second. On the program this hour, Andrew Langer from the Institute for Liberty. We'll talk about the fight for the nomination to the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh. Can you believe his name is Brett Cameron? Oh, my God. What's next? We nominated somebody named Chad. Oh, sorry. I mean, apparently, that's like a thing now. Because, Brett. I mean, the founding fathers never could have envisioned a day, Cameron, when the Supreme Court would have had a member on it named Brett.
What does Brett Michaels feel like today?
I did see a satirical a news piece from, I think it's called the, I think it's like the Beloit Gazette or something. It's a satirical, it's like The Onion. But for Wisconsin, and they had a story about Brett Favre changing his name to Carroll today, out of shame.
Well played.
So there you go. But again, that's satirical. If you see that in the Washington Post, don't believe it. Okay, they're just falling for a lot of stuff these days, layers upon layers of fact checkers, and yet they had retraction yesterday about we inadvertently included material from the satirical website Clickhole. I mean, who looks at? First of all, Cameron, we'll get to the here of the day, the deal of the day, and the good of the day. Who looks at Clickhole and says, oh,
when you're desperate,
when you're legit,
when you're desperate to dunk on Trump at any possible angle or position, yes, I guess you'll look at Clickhole. That'll take anything.
I guess so. It's amazing. Every day, our news media just breaks new ground, right? I mean, just going into the ground. That's why they're breaking the new ground, because it just kept getting lower and lower, and so new ground is broken. All right, let's get to our hero of the day, our deal of the day, our good guy of the day as well. Our hero of the day from WLOX. Juveniles taken into custody after a store robbery. This was from Diverville, Mississippi. Four juveniles taken into custody after an early morning convenience store robbery in Diverville turned into a shooting, a police chase, and a canine search through the woods. Store owner fired shots at the suspects, hit one of them in the stomach. That suspect taken to a hospital for treatment. The remaining three, identified as juveniles between the ages of 14 and 16 years of age, taken into custody, will spend time in the Harrison County Juvenile Detention Center. The car used in the robbery was found out to be stolen from the city of Hattiesburg, Mississippi. It was about 6 o'clock in the morning when officials reported four suspects tried to rob the Pops Lamy convenience store, POPP cameras. We need to check with John Pops. See, this was a relation down there in Diverville, Mississippi. Investigators say the suspects then took off in a car, ended up near the Biloxi High School softball fields. They got out of the car. Some ran into the woods behind the field. Diverville police caught three of the suspects. Biloxi police caught the fourth. Investigation still ongoing. But that convenience store employee protecting himself from those four would-be robbers, not expected to be facing any charges. He is today's hero
of the day. Our deal of the day from Tampa Bay, Tampa Bay Times, second suspect arrested in the shooting death of XXXTentacion in South Florida. We first told you about this murder day it happened. And now a second arrest has been made in the shooting death of this young rapper, Jose Onfroy. He was killed June 18th as he was leaving a upscale motorsport shop in Deerfield Beach, Florida. Detectives say a guy named Michael Boatwright, who is was arrested back on July the 5th on unrelated drug charges. They say Boatwright and another armed suspect approached the rapper that afternoon in an apparent robbery. They are still seeking the second gunman. But Michael Boatwright has now been charged with first-degree murder. The second arrest in the case of Dedrick Devonshay Williams, arrested back on June the 20th, charged with first-degree murder, operating a vehicle without a license, as well as a probation violation. Authorities say they're also seeking a person of interest in the case, 22-year-old Robert Allen, who is wanted in Broward County right now, on a felony warrant for violating probation for possession of the drug PVP, also known as Flocka, as well as illegally carrying a concealed firearm. The Tampa Bay Times says XXXTentacion, just 20 years old at the time of his death, he had been awaiting trial on multiple domestic violence charges, including aggravated battery of a pregnant woman as well as false imprisonment. And the Tampa Bay Times notes that following his death, XXXTentacion's music surged on the Billboard Hot 100, with multiple songs reentering the charts after falling off. Sad shot to the top spot, becoming the first posthumous number one hit for a lead solo artist since Cameron. Can you remember this?
Elvis?
First posthumous number one hit. No. It's been more recent.
Oh, Prince?
Not quite that recent.
Okay. Michael Jackson.
Notorious B.I.G.
Oh my God, totally off.
Mo Money, Mo Problems. Topped the chart following his death in 1997. Now, again, both of these suspects arrested in the death of XXXTentacion with lengthy criminal histories. XXXTentacion himself had a fairly lengthy criminal history. And, you know, I'm just wondering, when does Alyssa Milano stop talking about legal gun owners for a second and start talking about the celebrity culture that is glorifying violence? That is, heck, that is profiting off of this kind of violence. You know, when XXXTentacion died and his songs reentered the Billboard Top 100, someone's making some money off of that, right? And it's weird that you have so many celebrities who are so convinced that the way to address violent crime is to go after people who aren't committing violent crimes. That the way to go after violent crime is to not go after the violent criminals, but to go after NRA members, to go after legal gun owners. And they'll talk about how they want to eradicate lawful gun culture. They want to talk about what they would do with illicit gun culture. They don't want to talk about the celebrity promotion, not even the celebrity promotion, the industry promotion of violence. But as we're talking about this, Cameron sends me another story. Rapper Tekashi 6ix9ine has been arrested in New York City on an outstanding warrant related to an alleged choking of a Fantasy Galleria mall in Houston, Texas. Now, here's the twist to this. There are going to be people who are upset about the arrest of Tekashi 6ix9ine, not because of an alleged choking of a fan at the Galleria mall in Houston. But who chokes a fan? Who does that? They're going to be upset because New York police served this warrant for a misdemeanor. And they're going to say that this is the police, this is the NYPD, this is the long arm of the law unfairly targeting Tekashi 6ix9ine. Because, you know, why would you go after this guy for a misdemeanor warrant? Why would you serve this warrant there in New York and arrest him on a warrant out of Texas? It's a misdemeanor charge. You're going to extradite him to Texas for a misdemeanor? And, you know, here's the thing. That might not always happen. It might be fairly rare that you would get arrested and extradited on a misdemeanor. But that's a point. Another point is that here you have a guy who is accused of choking out a fan who hasn't suffered any repercussions professionally for that, right? I mean, what? There are only a certain number of industries that you can work in where if you're arrested for a crime of violence, that is considered a career-enhancing thing as opposed to a career-ender, right? If you are Carol from accounting and you're arrested for, you know, a choking Bob in human resources, you're not going to get promoted. No one's going to say, Carol, we thought you showed a great deal of initiative there. And by the way, none of us like Bob anyway. What do you think about being our CEO? Not going to happen. But if you are, and a matter of fact, if you are, let's say you're an actor that specializes in rom-coms and you get accused of choking a fan, that probably is not going to be a career enhancer for you either. But if you're a rapper, any arrest, maybe the more violent, the better. Right? But that just adds to your street cred. It makes the critics praise you for your gritty realism. And it's something, again, I just can't help but think about this every time I see a celebrity or an up-and-coming rapper who is the victim of violence, who is the perpetrator of violence, and that violence just gets ignored by the very people who are telling us that you and I are to blame for violence in this country. And they don't want to say a word about the colleagues in their industry making money off of this violence. They don't want to say a word about the culture that they are helping to perpetrate, that condones and celebrates this violence, that views, again, every arrest as a merit badge. Nope. Much more interested in going after Dana Loesch, right? Going after Kolian, Dan Bongino. Well, there you go, our deal of the day from South Florida today. Good guy of the day, Western North Carolina, WLOS. But a story actually out of WHAM in Henrietta, New York. So this actually got picked up by regional media here. In Henrietta, Monday night, a pickup truck went up in flames. Corey Gallagher was driving. And I know how quickly a vehicle fire can spread. Thankfully, Corey was able to get out of his pickup truck without escaping injury. He said, all of a sudden, I just heard a whoosh, and it goes up in flames. Firefighters responded quickly. They were able to put out the fire eventually and even managed to save an American flag there on Corey Gallagher's truck. He says he's grateful that it was recovered. Did get a little bit burned up. He said once he saves up for a new truck, he will also be buying a new flag. Still hasn't figured out what caused the fire, but those firefighters there in Henrietta, New York, not able to save the pickup, but able to save Old Glory. We thank you for being in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. And Corey, by the way, if you need to get that smoke smell out, I'm just telling you, Odor Crusher, sponsor of our Good Guy segment each and every day. Amazing stuff. It's amazing. All you got to do is you got to put your clothes in the flag in the bag, zip it up, turn it on. Half an hour later, not going to be smelling smoke. You're going to be smelling that sweet, sweet air of freedom, Corey. I'm telling you, it works. It works. There you go. All right, when we come back after a quick timeout, Andrew Langer from the Institute for Liberty will be with us on the program. Steven Cruiser of PJ Media will join us on the show as well. We have more of the day's top Second Amendment news and information coming your way. So stick around. There's much more Cam and Company still to come.
Let me ask you a simple question. Do you believe you have a right to defend yourself and your family with a firearm in your own home? Four Supreme Court justices say you do, but four say you don't, because the deciding vote announced he's retiring. And your most fundamental right to self-defense could be extinguished. This is our opportunity to protect the one freedom that guarantees all the others, the freedom that makes America different from every other country on earth. The Second Amendment is at stake. America is at stake. We are the last place on earth that still believes in the fundamental God-given right of self-defense. And we don't care if we're the last ones in the arena. We will never, ever stop fighting for this freedom. We're the National Rifle Association of America, and we're freedom's safest place.
It's as patriotic as it gets. A gathering in the heartland of folks from all 50 states. Welders, salesmen, farmers, accountants, soldiers, first responders. Here, we're all the same. Here, we are all race fans. We are proud of our country, proud of our military, proud of our drivers. We proudly stand for our national anthem, and we have a great reverence for names like Yarborough, Earnhardt, Waltrip, and Gordon. Yes, there are other NASCAR races, but this one is special. 500 temper flaring, finger waving, ego busting 15 second laps. And deep into the warm August night, hardly a seat in the last great Coliseum will be used. You see, this isn't just a race. This is America's night race.
Speaking with Glenn Hoyer with the NRA Law Enforcement Division. Glenn, welcome back to the program. You've got an important piece of legislation you want to discuss. Tell us about it.
Hey, John. Thank you for having me. I wanted to take the time to discuss the Law Enforcement Officer Safety Act, commonly called LEOSA or H.R. 218. This law was passed in 2004, signed in by President George W. Bush. And it has been a great law to assist law enforcement, both active and retired, but specifically the retired officers. This legislation allows officers who meet the qualifications, and that is to have proper credentials and have a yearly qualification and proof of such, to be able to carry a concealed firearm nationwide. There are some restrictions, but there's a lot of misinformation out there about the law, and most importantly, there's a lot of active duty officers who can come in contact with retired officers who don't know the law exists or what the parameters are. So we've been putting forth a great effort at NRA Law Enforcement and in conjunction with ILA and the attorney there, James Baranowski, to give some presentations to update officers who are retired about the law, as well as to departments who have the active duty officers that may encounter a retired officer and not understanding the law that passed and the fact they can carry concealed nationwide. So we've had great turnout for programs here at the annual meeting and at training conferences to law enforcement conferences around the country. But I would also urge active and retired officers to visit our website, le.nra.org, and check out LEOSA, being the upper left-hand corner. There's frequently asked questions, a copy of the law, and even some articles that have been written by James Baranowski, our attorney and expert on the matter.
Wow, it sounds like a good wealth of information about LEOSA. Once again, there's seminars and a website. What's that website again?
It's le.nra.org.
And check out the section on LEOSA.
That's correct. Law Enforcement Officer Safety Act, LEOSA.
Thanks again for being a part of this edition of Cam and Company. Cam Edwards, your host, Andrew Langer from the Institute for Liberty, with us on the program right now at Andrew_Langer. Andrew, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Appreciate you joining us on the program. Hope your Independence Day in Colonial Williamsburg was as awesome as it sounded.
We had a great time. In fact, I broke a rule. I kept on George Mason for two segments. Had an absolutely fascinating conversation. I want to actually get into more detail with him at some point in time because he and I apparently are in disagreement about the direct election of senators. I'm a big fan of the way it was originally set up. George Mason, a bigger fan of the direct election of senators. So it's something I want to have a conversation with him about.
Really?
Yes.
I was surprised. I didn't know that.
Neither did I. We did not quite come to fisticuffs, but we definitely we're almost going to go down the road of having a heated discussion.
That would have been amazing radio had you gotten into a fist fight with George Mason on Independence Day. I don't know what the Colonial Williamsburg version of TMZ is, but they should have been there for that one. All right, well, let us know if you pick up that debate again with George Mason. In the meantime, we didn't know President Trump's pick, so you couldn't ask George Mason what he thought of the selection of Brett Kavanaugh to replace Anthony Kennedy on the Supreme Court. But I will ask you, Andrew Langer, what's your take on President Trump's nomination?
Well, you know, listen, besides the fact that I realize that I am, you know, 46 and or actually 47 now, and this guy is like so completely more accomplished than I am, it makes me very envious. You know, here's the thing. Like, I know I'm not going to agree with any Supreme Court nominee 100% on everything. What I find fascinating is we're now at a point where I know lots of folks who worked with this guy at the White House, and I should have known this. Mm-hmm. Like, I was saying it was going to be Amy Coney Barrett, but when you have Matt Schlapp at the American Conservative Union tweeting out in support of this guy, I think that should have been an indication that it was going to be this guy because they worked together at the White House. I hear that he's a really nice guy, and that, not that you need a Supreme Court justice to be a nice guy, but I think that's an important thing. People I respect like him, people who I respect who worked with Ted Cruz at the White House, I won't say the same thing about him. But what really intrigues me about this guy is in his 12 years on the D.C. Circuit for D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, about half of his decisions centered on the regulatory state and administrative law. And that to me is a great qualification, a really interesting academic qualification. You know, someone who is willing to look at this, who understands the administrative processes, who understands why we have a body of law called administrative law and the way that the federal government tries to get around that body of law. Someone who really, from what I understand, makes agencies work to make their point. You know, one of the big issues, Cam, in America today, in terms of public policy, is something called deference, which is the reliance that courts give to these agencies on how they interpret rules. And you know, it's been around for about 40 years, this concept called Chevron deference. We won't get into the nitty gritty of the Chevron case, but the idea is that if the EPA says that something is a water of the United States, then the courts give the EPA deference, absent some extraordinary circumstances. And the problem has been that in the last, you know, 50 years since the rise of the modern regulatory state, you know, as Congress has created very vague laws that are open to interpretation, it's given these agencies a huge amount of leeway in order to regulate. And that's part of the reason why we saw the cost of regulation in America double between 2005 and 2015, which had a massive impact on the economy. And we're really only seeing an uptick now that this president is reigning in the regulatory state. Future presidents aren't going to. And I'll give you a really good example. This is a rule that didn't go into effect, but the Clean Water Act specifically was not supposed to regulate standard farming activity. You live out in Farmville. You know what disking is, where a disker is used to break up ground on a farm. Mm-hmm. That was not supposed to be regulated under the Clean Water Act. Well, somebody at the EPA put out a proposal where they were going to regulate disking as, this is no joke, you can go look this up, as creating mini mountain ranges, therefore subject to the Clean Water Act. It's not making that up. I know it sounds bizarre. Thankfully,
and it's literally making a mountain out of a molehill.
Quite literally making a mountain out of a molehill. And so this is the kind of thing. This is how you get a mud puddle that's wet, you know, 14 days out of the year, how all of a sudden that is transformed into a navigable water of the United States. So this guy Kavanaugh, he understands the problems that can ensue when you give these agencies deference, and he's been more than willing to sort of push back on that. That, to me, makes him a very worthwhile candidate.
You know, we've and it's interesting because we've been talking specifically a lot about Second Amendment issues. He was one of the three judges who heard the Heller 2 case challenging D.C.'s semi-auto ban as well as their registration requirements. And he wrote a very good dissenting opinion objecting to these rules, to these laws, saying that they, in his opinion, and, you know, in the precedent set by Heller McDonald, that these laws violate the U.S. Constitution. And it was interesting, Andrew, because, you know, he didn't say you can't have any gun laws. But what he said is that, you know, when you look at the test that the Supreme Court laid out, you have to look at the text of the Bill of Rights. You have to look at the text of the Constitution. You have to look at history and tradition. What are the types of gun control laws that we have typically had in this country?
And have we ever, has it been common? Do we have a tradition of banning entire classes of firearms in this country? No. Does the text suggest that we can, you know, ban entire classes of firearms? Well, no. And in fact, the Supreme Court said in Heller, you can't ban semi-automatic handguns. So why would we think that the Second Amendment would allow for a ban on semi-automatic long guns when the Supreme Court has already told us, well, you can't ban semi-automatic handguns? You know, it's interesting because that's not the type of argument that you would see necessarily in a law review article. But it also gets to the heart of what's some of the flaws in the gun control arguments. You know, they're just trying to cobble together a legal argument as best they can as to why the Second Amendment actually doesn't mean what it says. And Judge Kavanaugh comes in here in this dissent and said, okay, well, help me make sense of this. And if you read the majority opinion, the majority's decision was basically, well, you know, it's a gun control law, and yeah, it's going to affect legal gun owners, but there's a public safety issue here, and the government says they want it, so it's allowed. And, you know, that's exactly why we've seen these dissents from Supreme Court justices arguing that, okay, it's time for the high court to hear a case because these lower courts are abusing what we said in Heller. They're completely abusing what we said in McDonald. Brett Kavanaugh didn't abuse those decisions. He actually researched those decisions. He looked at what the court said. And he came to a different conclusion than his colleagues in that case. But I got to tell you, after reading both of those opinions, Andrew, I think he came to the right conclusion.
Well, and that's just it. You know, the other thing you have to recognize, and I'm sure you've had this conversation with some of the other guests so far, is that, you know, Kavanaugh is so well respected amongst legal scholars that, you know, that you have justices of the high court reading and referring to his dissents, you know, sort of serving as a guidepost, sort of laying things out there. That's the other thing that gets me is the respect that it's not going to be folks on the left per se. I don't know if I've seen any legal scholars on the left yet talking about what a good pick Brett Kavanaugh is, but folks who are both conservatives and libertarians. And I'll point to this. If you get a chance, have a conversation with Jonathan Adler. Jonathan Adler is a professor of law at Case Western Reserve in Cleveland. He used to be at the Competitive Enterprise Institute working on a lot of these environmental issues. And he writes at a blog called The Vola Conspiracy, which is my favorite legal scholarship blog. Yes, I have a favorite legal scholarship blog. and you know, Adler's written a number of pieces already about Judge Kavanaugh's record, very favorable. And the most important thing is he's a thoughtful individual. That's what we want. We want individuals who are going to think deeply about these issues. Right? That was always, you know, the thing that bothered me about the criticism of Justice Thomas years ago. You know, Justice Thomas doesn't say a lot on the court. And there are a lot of reasons why he doesn't speak in public a great deal. But what he is a thoughtful jurist. He sits there and he evaluates things carefully. You know, that's what you want. You don't want someone who's necessarily always going to lead with an ideological bent, but you want them to be thoughtful in their analyses.
Absolutely right. Now, as for, you know, lefties making the case for Brett Kavanaugh, there was Akil Amar, who had a piece in the New York Times. I think this was maybe 2 days ago, a liberal's case for Brett Kavanaugh. This was also followed up by pieces at GQ. The liberal case for Brett Kavanaugh is a bunch of horseshit. Pardon my language. And at Slate, the liberal case for Brett Kavanaugh is complete garbage. So, you know, I'm not sure that the left really wants to hear that that thoughtful discussion about, well, OK, here's who Brett Kavanaugh is. And, you know, Akil Amar, Yale University law professor, very highly regarded, a legal scholar. But as soon as he says, hey, you know, you should actually take a look at what Judge Kavanaugh has done in the past, all of it. Oh, it's garbage. Oh, that's horse baloney. I mean, like, you know, Andrew, and here's the thing. I mean, this goes back to even before we knew who that candidate was going to be, who Donald Trump was going to select. You already had senators coming out and saying, I will not vote for that candidate. I know it's going to be bad because he's on that list. He or she's on that list, and they're on that list. I'm not voting for it. I mean, you know, this is, look, we know
We know that the fix is in for a lot of these senators. It doesn't matter. Donald Trump could have come out and said, you know what, I decided to go with Merrick Garland. And a lot of these senators would still be like,
Merrick Garland, no. We can't trust Merrick Garland anymore. I will tell you this much. One of the things that bothers me greatly about this whole thing, now listen, I don't have a law degree. I worked for lawyers at the beginning part of my career. I worked for some great lawyers at the beginning part of my career. And but every once in a while I get lawyer envy. And one of the ways that I get lawyer envy is because I was never going to be a part of the Federalist Society. Now, I've spoken to Federalist Society chapters. I've been very fortunate in that regard. And again, you know, no small amount of envy of the law students who are part of those. The idea that folks on the left are now taking the Federalist Society, again, an organization rooted in legal scholarship, folks who, you know, yes, they have a free market, limited government, conservo-libertarian bent, but their beliefs are rooted in legal philosophy. And to tarnish that organization as an extremist organization, it borders on criminally defamatory, I think. But, you know, the reality is that this is where we are in 2018. You have folks, you know, Akil Maher is going to face some very serious challenges from their colleagues because the left will not stand to have anybody break the party line at this point in time. It's very disconcerting to me. You know, listen, we get it. We knew it was going to happen. We knew that there was going to be at least one organization. It happened in this case to be the Women's March, where they were going to release their press release and they were going to fail to edit it. And it was basically going to be their canned, we're against whoever Donald Trump's nominee was press release. We knew that was going to happen. What I'm concerned about is the potential for violence down the road as this as the debate heats up, and then there's an increasing likelihood of that.
So talking again with Andrew Langer from the Institute for Liberty, you know, we saw yesterday everybody's now trying to play the tea leaves and you know, what's going to happen. Chuck Schumer says, I will oppose this with everything I have. and I don't really think he has a lot, Andrew. You know, if Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski were to say we find Brett Kavanaugh unacceptable, then there'd be 49 Republicans. Chuck Schumer could try to keep his caucus together, hold those red state Democrats in line. I think the most likely scenario, honestly, is that Kavanaugh's confirmed with, you know, we saw what? With Gorsuch, we saw Donnelly, we saw Manchin, we saw Heitkamp crossover and vote to confirm Gorsuch. Wouldn't surprise me if we saw those same three do the same thing this time around.
I think it all depends on what the political tea leaves look like for the midterms going into the fall. I think if it looks like the Democrats can pick up the Senate, then you may see them sort of hold to their party line. It's possible. But no, I think you're right. I think in the end, at least one, if not two of those three crosses over, and votes and sort of does away with, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, crossing over, and who the heck knows what happens with John McCain at that point in time. But this is where we are now. I'm not tremendously upset by the idea that we've now gotten down to where Supreme Court nominees are going to be confirmed on a party line vote strictly. I think that was sort of an inevitability the way things were going in the Senate. There are some folks who are decrying that. But the reality is that no president has ever and ever should be guaranteed that a nominee gets confirmed. But the other side of it is this is why elections matter. And you know, this is why a lot of folks voted for Donald Trump. It's why a lot of folks voted for guys like Roy Moore in Alabama, even though Roy Moore didn't win. But this is why this sort of creates a stark contrast. You know, that is the one great unifying sigh of relief that I think everybody had last Monday was that it was not going to be a Hillary Clinton, that it was not Hillary Clinton making that announcement.
Yes. In fact, we talked about this on the show yesterday because obviously, Monday night, if you were online or if you were watching what was going on outside of the Supreme Court, I mean, there were a lot of people who were just losing their minds. And
yes.
Andrew, yes, I had those moments of Schadenfreude where it was, you know, but I did start thinking, you know what? What if Hillary Clinton had gotten elected?
Yeah.
And instead of, you know, Justice Gorsuch, we saw Hillary Clinton nominate Merrick Garland. And then now when Anthony Kennedy retired, you know, she's nominating Tim Kaine. Or she's nominating Terry McAuliffe.
Or Barack Obama.
You know, like, or Barack Obama or Eric Holder. What would my reaction be? Would I be, you know, this is fine? Or would I be a little freaked out as well? I would be a little freaked out. I happen to think that even if Brett Kavanaugh is nominated and is put on the bench, I don't think we're turning into The Handmaid's Tale. If we had, Justice Holder, if we had Justice Obama, I think that we would see a Supreme Court that would directly attack our right to keep and bear arms and would rule that right to be next to non-existent. They would go as far as they could without directly contravening or overturning Heller or McDonald, at least right away, but they would curtail our right to keep and bear arms as far as they possibly could. They would uphold every gun control challenge that came down the road. So
you know, this is the,
I have a little bit of empathy, I'm with you.
This is the irony of The Handmaid's Tale, right? Because, you know, as preposterous as The Handmaid's Tale, and it's just bad television, but we won't even get in there. You know, but the reality is
Cameron Gray, you and I have had this conversation. Oh, my God, he's furious now.
How dare you, Langer.
You guys are going to have that conversation off air.
Yeah, but the point – I'm sorry about that, Cameron. But the point is that in the end, you know, what we're talking about here is a left that is not just attacking the Second Amendment, but they're attacking the First Amendment. You know, just look at Elena Kagan's dissent in Janus, and you see the fact that they are deeply concerned about the expansive nature of the First Amendment, which is, you know, insane, given that it was the left that has been protecting the First Amendment for decades, if not over a century. You know, they've been going after the Fifth Amendment for years, both substantive and procedural due process, as well as the various property rights protection aspects of it. I mean, certainly the Ninth and Tenth Amendments have not been respected. You know, this is why I find this idea that somehow conservatives are trying to deliver The Handmaid's Tale when it's the authoritarian left that has been trying to do that for years.
Absolutely. Andrew, listen, unfortunately, we got to run, man. I appreciate you coming on the program. So good talking with you today, and I look forward to doing this again very soon.
Talk to you later, man.
All right, Andrew Langer from the Institute for Liberty on Twitter at Andrew_Langer. Hey, Cameron, once Andrew smooths things over with you, I should say, for besmirching your favorite show.
Dare he.
We need to have a heads up for the next time he debates George Mason, because I want to have my camera phone there in case it comes to blows.
We'll figure it out.
Because you know Andrew Langer taking a swing at some dude in a powdered wig, probably going to go viral.
Yes.
Over the 17th Amendment. I mean, like, I've seen, you know, those history rap battles and the economic rap battles that they have, but I don't think I've ever seen the direct election of senators lead to fisticuffs.
Langer will be
your man. Streets of Colonial Williamsburg. Now, Stephen Cruiser, I don't know, maybe you pour enough margaritas in Stephen and he'll get a little fighty with you on the 17th Amendment. He's going to join us after a quick timeout, sober, because it's only like 1 o'clock in the afternoon there in Arizona. Stick around. We've got much more Cam and Company on the way right after this. I'm very pleased to actually get a chance to talk in person with Kyle Kashuv. Kyle, how are you, man?
It's good, man. It's good.
What made you decide that you wanted to speak out, even though you knew that what you were saying was going to be going against the narrative? And it's not, by the way, like you came out and said, hey, you know what, I think everybody needs to own every gun possible. What your message was, let's talk about things that actually work, things that we can all agree on. And I think that kind of got lost a little bit.
I mean, a lot of people like to straight up go and push policy that they don't really know about. What I've done is I've taken the time and I've looked at every single policy that I'm pushing out, and I've talked to senators and I've talked to people pushing the policy and creating the policy, and I said, look, there's an issue here, we have to fix that, but in total, I want to push policies that work. I don't want to push policy that ideologically sound good but don't do anything. As the president said yesterday, people like to push people like to push things to make them feel good, not actually impact the community and the nation positively. And I've been very careful in choosing what legislation I'm pushing and what I'm fighting for. And it has to be, it has to have more pros. It has, the pros at the end of the day always have to outweigh the cons.
You've had an opportunity to speak, as you say, to a lot of politicians, including the president.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how many senators you're up to now. And the interesting thing is, you're not only talking to people who you may agree with, you're talking to people who you probably disagree with, too. You're not afraid to have those conversations.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's idiotic to kick out and not even talk to half of America. I mean, whether or not you disagree or agree with their policy, it's still, they represent millions of people, and they make decisions, and if I can even, on a sliver of change their opinion on a subject, why not do that? Why not think about the other side while trying to explain to my side? Like, I talked to a senator, and I explained to them the position of the Second Amendment, and whether he disagreed, he respected it with my opinion, he understood some of the viewpoints, and whether or not he went to vote against or for the policy that I was pushing, I mean, I took the chance to meet with him. I'm going to take every shot and every opportunity I can. And I don't think that alienating half of America is going to be positive, because if you truly want to change, then you're going to look and you're going to try to talk to all of America.
Absolutely. What do you think of the walkouts in support of the Second Amendment that took place, just in late April?
I mean, since the beginning, I've been very headstrong about what I think. I don't think that walkouts do anything. I think it's for PR and publicity. And you can do that if you're going for PR and publicity, but if in reality you're trying to push policy and make sure that something that my school never happens again, then you go to legislators. You don't waste your time protesting to get views or clicks from mainstream media. You go talk to your politicians. You go talk to your state legislators. You do a town hall. Doing a walkout doesn't do anything. It creates confusion in your school system, and it doesn't do anything. Like, tell me what a walkout has accomplished. I have not seen a single thing that a walkout has truly accomplished. What I've seen is talking to legislators, either from the left or the right, is what gets things done.
Yeah. So are you hoping to take what you've done and tell other teenagers, give them advice, give them lessons on actually how to be politically effective?
Well, look, I don't think I'm a professional in any way, shape, or form in this.
I think you have to be, though, honestly.
I mean, I just think that you have to look at it rationally and be like, look, at the end of the day, senators are still people. They have logic, they have emotion, and they understand the situations and consequences of their actions. They understand what policy effects and the day-to-day struggles of people. I can tell you that every Republican senator I've talked to truly cares about this. 100%, they never want to see this ever happen again. And talking to them has shown me that they don't ever want this to happen again.
Talking again with the Kyle Kashuv, and what happens next for you, Kyle? I mean, where do you want to go?
Yesterday I got on board with Charlie Kirk and the Turning Point. I'm the director for high school outreach, and I think it's amazing, and I really hope to empower students. I use the term empowering somewhat cliche, but I really hope to make Republicans feel safe and secure to speak out. And I've seen that even at my school, Republicans are scared to speak out, and they're silenced, and people have told me, oh, Kyle, after all this, I feel more comfortable talking about political positions.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. You're making a difference.
To me, throughout all the hate, people have come up to me and said, yo, Kyle, thank you for what you're doing. I don't feel as like threatened or intimidated now because you've spoken up and you've taken all the weight. And I think that's great. I'm willing to take the weight if it allows one person to feel more comfortable.
Yeah. So I got to ask, how did you end up here at the NRA annual meeting?
Look, man, I mean, definitely the president speaking was like, now I have to go. Like the VP and Trump speaking, you can't miss it out. Pence was absolutely amazing. The entire crowd was absolutely energetic, and the president did amazing as well.
Yeah. So are you going to be old enough to vote in November?
No, I'm going to be 17.
Okay. What is your message? I mean, obviously you've got a lot of gun control supporters who are out there trying to register people the day they turn 18. What is your message as the director of high school outreach now about the importance of these November elections if you're old enough to vote?
We have to win.
Being a part of this edition of Cam and Company, coming to you from beautiful downtown Farmville, Virginia. We had John Pop and Danny Lyon here earlier this week. I've got to tell John, we've got another restaurant opening up here in beautiful downtown Farmville, Virginia, a vacant building that will soon be occupied. Talking about 100-plus craft beers and burgers. Sounds like it's going to be a really big deal. Telling you, I don't know what the economy is looking like in your neighborhood, but this is a big change from when I moved to the area here in late 2012, early 2013. Farmville is booming right now. That's good to see. I want to join us on the, or want to welcome to the program right now, joining us, Stephen Cruiser of PJ Media on Twitter at Stephen Cruiser. That'd be Stephen with a PH. and Cruiser with a K. Stephen, how are you, sir?
Fine, thank you. Missed you guys last week. Day off celebration.
Yeah, I know. It was. How was your Independence Day?
It was fantastic. I went to the range and shot a 40 cal until my arms were ready to fall off.
That's beautiful. That's
While I'm on with you, I got to tell you, you know, my buddy had too that I didn't even know he had. He's my best friend. He never even bothered to tell me he's got this gun. He's got a Colt Python with an 8-inch barrel. He brought that too.
And he never told you about it.
It's not just sitting in the safe in the garage, and he brings this thing in, and the guys at the range who ran the range were drooling over it. And I guess he got it for practically nothing from a friend's dad.
You know,
and so everybody at the range is throwing numbers at him, offering him money for it right there.
I was gonna say, I'm always like, I try not to be envious when I hear somebody who has a really beautiful gun say something like, "Oh yeah, you wouldn't believe it, I got it so dirt cheap." You know, I like, oh, good for you. At the same time, you're like, why don't I know anybody who has really cool guns that will sell them to me for
and
cheap?
And doesn't know what they're worth.
Exactly. Well, I'm glad that you had a great time out of the range on Independence Day. That is a wonderful way to celebrate. Now, you've got a tweet. Just saw this less than an hour ago here, talking about this Fox News story. Border Patrol agents attacked with rocks while rescuing a pregnant woman, according to officials. And as you say, American liberals have been ginning up hostility against those who protect our borders. This is on them. How unfair of you, Stephen, to accuse those who have been calling for the abolishment of ICE, who've been saying we need to get in their faces, that ICE employees are no worse than or no better than Nazi prison guards. How dare you accuse them of ginning up an attack like this?
I know, it's awfully mean of me, isn't it? I'm sure I triggered somebody. It's been pretty relentless. You know, they're for what? We're looking at 4 weeks now, at least.
Yeah.
I think it's been about four straight weeks of the really heavy anti-ICE rhetoric. I don't know how this plays out in their heads, but you know what? I get it when the wackos on social media are advocating for a certain side that's from a fringe or for something like that. But my problem with this is mainstream Democrats have been falling in line with this anti-ICE rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it gets really dicey, because you've got people that have huge platforms that are on national television several times a week that are not only condoning this, but sometimes echoing it. That's where it gets really dangerous and, I think, problematic.
I think you're right. In fact, I saw a story earlier today that there's actually legislation now that's been introduced in Congress to abolish ICE. I think it's got introduced with like three co-sponsors, obviously all of them Democrats. And I'll be honest with you, Stephen, not exactly high-profile members of Congress. Like, I did not recognize any of the names of these sponsors. I think one is from downstate New York, and then there are a couple of others from deep blue areas. But what this bill does is it abolishes ICE, says that they're going to come up with some sort of panel that will get together and figure out, okay, what are we going to have to replace ICE? But in the meantime, we'll basically take any sort of executive branch oversight for immigration enforcement, and we'll put it in the hands of some sort of congressional committee that will then, you know, determine what the rules and the regulations are for this new agency. So, I mean, that's apparently, you know, now there's we want some policy specifics. That's what at least one group of Democrats is offering. The problem for those Democrats is that Americans aren't really interested in this.
No, Americans aren't interested in it. Most of these Democrats, I don't think, know what ICE's mission actually is. I don't think they know what they're doing on a regular basis. It's been coming to light recently that ICE is heavily involved in the fight against human trafficking. That's always been something they've been fighting. And that's part and parcel. Is that the correct phrase? That goes hand in hand with the fight against illegal immigration. I mean, there's a homeless camp here in Tucson that they found a tunnel under that they think was being used for trafficking. And, you know, they're not things that you can separate. You can't say, well, here's the line where, you know, the nicest illegal aliens are coming across the border, and here's the line where people are being trafficked. No, they get trafficked because they fall in with bad people who promise to bring them across the border to a better place, and that's how that whole thing goes down.
Yeah,
talking again with our friend Stephen Cruiser of PJ Media. So I'm curious, Stephen. I mean, do you think that does the border remain an issue, or does that just quietly get forgotten about until it's convenient to bring it up again? Because now we've got to stop Brett Kavanaugh from getting on the Supreme Court. I mean, if you're on the left anyway, you've got to stop Brett Kavanaugh. So forget those children at the border. We've got other fish to fry right now.
One of my favorite things about all of this drama in the last couple of years is they're always blaming Trump for being able to take over the news cycle and change it to something else that distracts them. But in reality, they basically distract themselves. They're the ones that are chasing after things on their own, and they don't always need a carrot dangled in front of them. So if they want to keep blaming the president, that's fine. But it's the thing that keeps happening is, you know, they're just like all shiny object, and then there's a new shiny object, and they're off after that. So I think 2 weeks ago at this time, they really wanted that kids in cages narrative to stick until November. And now they're hanging their hats on, wow, we're going to fight this. You know, Schumer told them yesterday, said, we either fight this hard or the base is going to abandon us.
Yeah. The problem that Chuck Schumer's kind of put himself in is that, you know, for the past 2 years, it's been about ginning up the base. It's been about getting that base energized and keeping them energized. And now it's about winning elections. And it's not just about winning primaries, but now it's about winning general elections. And so now you want that base. You want their enthusiasm to still be high, but you also don't want to scare off independent voters, which are, you know, the largest voting bloc in the country today. Again, most Americans, I think the latest poll was, 25% say they're in favor of abolishing ICE. In a lot of these red states that are represented by Democratic senators, there is a clear desire to see a confirmation vote for Brett Kavanaugh before the midterm elections. You've got, candidates right now in upstate New York that are acknowledging Democratic candidates saying, I would love to be able to ban quote unquote assault weapons. But if I say that publicly, I'm not going to get elected. So I can't say that publicly. And then it comes out anyway. They're doing, I think, they've done themselves a disservice because now they're locked in to playing to their base, which is turning off, I think, a great deal of Americans in the middle.
Well, and as I pointed out yesterday on the PJ Media Live blog, is I'm not even sure they're correctly identifying their base here. The Democrats' real base, if you want to talk about it, are the swing voters that they lost in 2016. That was a solid Democrat base for the longest time, and that's why they were able to win those swing states all the time, even in the years where it looked like the Republican presidential candidate might win them. That was the base they lost. I don't think these screaming protester, let's get an Antifa mask or whatever, I don't think that's their actual base, and I think they're kind of suckered in to playing to them right now. And while they do that, they ignore trying to win back any of those swing state Democrats that they lost in 2016.
Talking again with our friend Stephen Cruiser of PJ Media. So if you had to make a prediction today as to how you think the midterm elections are going to go. And I realize it's mid-July, not early November or late October. But what's your sense right now? In Arizona, I'm curious your sense, because we're seeing some polling suggesting that the Democrat Senate candidate is actually leading in the polls. Now, you have not had your primary, right? So you've got a primary for the Republican Senate candidacy there. Do you see in Arizona this U.S. Senate race being as tight as the polls show it being right now?
At the moment, probably, but McSally has been ticking up constantly for about a month and a half. So it's going to be a tight primary. That's going to be tough. I know for a fact it's a bitter battle here, because I've been back for 5 months and I've been listening to people talk about that, Republicans talk about that with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think McSally probably has a better machine overall in the end to win. And she is moving right on immigration just at the right time. So I think it's been getting closer. I think it's probably closer than it looked as of today. It's been 2 days since I last checked Real Clear Politics, but I think it's a little closer than that. But overall, you know, a midterm election is supposed to be a gimme for the party that's not in the White House. History yes. says they usually win that fairly easily. And the Democrats were not only planning on winning that, they were planning on a huge, huge victory. And I really think it's going to be a whimper at best for them. The Republicans will lose some seats in the House. They're not going to lose the House. And as of today, it looks like the GOP might pick up a seat in the Senate. Even and that's factoring in the Democrat winning in Arizona.
Right. I saw that polling. I think it came out yesterday as well, and it was fascinating. I mean, this was a SurveyMonkey poll. I forget. Was it Axios? News outlet? Yeah, and
I believe that was the one.
And you're right. I mean, it showed that the big blue wave was going to be a little puddle come November.
This wave probably isn't going to cover anybody's shoes.
Well, and here's the thing. You and I and a lot of folks on the right and maybe even a few folks in the middle are going to spend a lot of time between now and November talking about this, that, the strategy for Democrats right now probably going to lead to huge margins in these deep blue areas. Right. And will lead to the nomination of, far left candidates like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. That's not the trouble for the Democrats, though. I mean, the trouble for the Democrats, going back to 2016, was reaching those voters in the upper Midwest, reaching those voters in Ohio, western Pennsylvania. And again, they're telling themselves that the way to do that is through democratic socialism, Stephen. But I don't really think that's what those voters in those states are looking for.
No, it's not. And they don't get that. The people in Ohio aren't being moved or motivated by a bunch of kids screaming outside of the Supreme Court. But I think this is part of being isolated in a bubble. I think when you're in an echo chamber and you surround yourself with people who agree with you all the time, this is what happens. And the Democrats don't get out enough. They surround themselves not only with each other, but with the media. And then the media reinforces their false hopes and beliefs. And but I don't want to telegraph how they could get out of this mess. I hope they stay in it for a while.
Stephen Kruger. Listen, buddy, we got to go. Unfortunately, music is about to kick in here, but I appreciate you joining us on the program as always. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk again very soon.
Bye.
All right, that music means it is time for us to depart for the day. We will be back tomorrow live, 2 p.m. Eastern, right here on NRA TV with all of the day's top Second Amendment news and information. We'll give you details on Tedra Cobb in New York's 21st District. Will she have tweeted by then? Guessing not, but we'll let you know. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. We'll see you soon.